All right, tomorrow on the show, Jay Dia. Yeah, tomorrow, Humble and Fred. I don't even know where we're going to be. Where are we going to be? Here?
Doesn't matter.
Wherever we are, there we are. Listen to our show.
Are we doing anything now?
I thought we were.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you going to? Why? I'm sorry. Do you want to get into your Fred character?
No, I'm sorry. I just.
Humble and Fred, show of shows, tomorrow at 7 a.m. across Canada.
We're going to have singer Jadea Kelly on the show. I think that's how you say her name. You might not know her name now, but after being on the show, she will become a household name, Howard.
Oh, yes. Tomorrow we'll introduce her to North America.
Yes, Howard.
Yes, Howard. Thank you, Fred character.
This is the legendary Humble and Fred Show, Canada's national morning show.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The following episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by Sleep Country, Pizza Pizza, FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Squatty Potty, Fresh Books, and our newest sponsor, Mitsubishi Motors of Canada. And as always, we broadcast to the world from the center of Canada's universe, Toronto, planted in the tender eardrum of Sirius XM Canada. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, call 1-877-965-2844, 1-877-965-2844.
Okay, you know, we really haven't had enough time this week to talk to Phil. It's been, you know, we're a little bit out of our element. We're broadcasting from the beautiful studios of Sirius XM Canada in downtown Toronto. And you know, we're sitting in a different configuration than we normally sit, which is very close to each other. Humble and Fred, our proximity is normally only 3 or 4 feet away from one another, facing one another. And now we're about 10 or 12 feet away, and it's a little bit different. So the fill is we're not getting enough fill on the show the last couple of days. I mean, do you feel that way, Fred?
Yes, I do feel that way, Howard. There's
okay.
Fred? Yes, I really feel that way. There's been a void the past couple of days, and it's our jolly friend here.
What if it sounds like one of those things a consultant would say to you? It's like, well, you know, I think what you guys should do is say each other's names more. Okay, Fred. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, Howard.
You know, those are the kind of things that we would be in meetings with consultants. We had the number one show in Toronto for 18 to 34-year-old adults, and they would be worried about the order in which I backsold the records. Now, I want you to listen. Mm-hmm. I know you guys are doing okay. Mm-hmm. What I think would make a huge improvement mm-hmm. is if you said the callers first and then the name of the song. Because when you say the name of the song first and the callers, people don't know what radio station it is.
I know we've talked about this before, but there's so much in that situation with consultants and some program directors. It's all about justifying existence. It's like,
right, Fred?
If they just let things roll, Howard. Everything would be fine, but it's like they come to, I better say something today because I am getting this paycheck, so I better have some kind of an input to justify why I'm here. So, Howard, when you're back selling the songs, put them in the proper order, you ninny.
You idiot. I don't care for the morning man of the highest rated show in Toronto. Say the call letters first, boob. But anyway, we have not. Hi, everyone.
Hello, people.
Hello. Paper. I say hello. Phil Hong have not been featured enough on our show this week.
I thought it was on long enough. I mean, different dynamic here.
That's true. On Monday, we had the post-mortem on where you went Friday. But I'm done with that now because I find it aggravating.
I got, there was a sweet little Cecil story this morning, Howard.
About the cat.
Yeah.
How is Cecil the cat?
Oh, he's all right. But he's licking his hula hula a lot. So we're going to take out his sutures at the vet today.
Oh, and that's going to be $100 and some odd. Phil, here's an idea. Why don't you bring Cecil into the show one day and we'll grab you by the pussy?
I can just hear his voice. It's like,
what? We'll grab you. We'll grab Cecil by the pussy.
We'll grab the puss by the puss.
We'll grab Phil by the puss. Because he'd be holding the pussy. So we would grab him by the pussy.
Ah, now it makes sense. Come on,
follow.
Come on, Howard.
But he was saying $120, and that That's a lot of stress on your financial situation.
Oh, it's all right. It's not bad. But the thing is, though, the vet, every time you see her, even if it's for a little scrape on him or maybe if he's complaining of pain, Cecil is, well, we charge, well, they charge $120 and for anything. Mm-hmm. And then it's everything's on top. So my vet's kind of expensive. Just a little bit.
Andy, they all are, Phil.
Yeah.
He also had a story. He had a little set to with Fang.
Okay, hang on a second. I'm not ready to move on.
I'm here to suck your blood.
I'm not. Fang? What's her name? Vang? Fang?
Pearl, her
Fred
name
calls
is Pearl.
Her Fang.
Vang.
But you know, yeah. Once Fred gets a hold of a bitroot.
You know, I know. I'm tedious.
I'm going to tell you.
It's exhausting.
Here's one thing I know I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what funny is. I don't know what funny is. I've been doing comedy my whole life, and you told a joke yesterday afternoon. It just left me...
Oh, and that one's dusty.
That one left me completely...
You didn't get it? I've told you that before.
I got it, but I just didn't understand the raucous laughter it...
It's just one of those cute little jokes if you hear it for the first time. I repeat it constantly over the years because I like it.
Well, I've never heard it before.
Really?
That was my first airing of it.
Well, they were talking about
choir. Wait, let me just say, though. Okay. I watched hours and hours of stand-up comedy. I listened to Canada Laughs. I listened to all the comedic channels. And yet, when you unleashed one of your hot bits, I was like, what? But, I don't begrudge you anything. God knows I'm a big fan of yours, Fred. But we'll get back to you in a second, Phil. So just unleash this joke. And God, listen, everyone,
they were talking
enjoy.
About music and song and all that. And then I said, hey, by the way, I got a question for you. How many balls does a quartet have?
How many balls does a quartet have, he said.
And what would you say, Phil? What would you say?
Balls in a quartet? Four,
yes.
Eight of them?
Eight.
No.
The answer, how many, Fred?
16.
16? Why?
One's a tenor. I just think that's a cute. I think that's a cute.
I get it,
joke.
But it's really. It didn't make you laugh that much.
It's
a nice Howard.
He didn't laugh at all.
Howard.
That's a reaction. Oh, this guy laughed none.
Because he didn't. He thought Howard doesn't want me to laugh at this, so I'm not going to.
Oh, really? You think that's what this man thought?
I didn't really get it.
He didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, because it's. You have to kind of go. One's a tenor. One has 10 balls. It's a 10-ball joke.
Did you hear the laughter at that table yesterday?
I just pointed it out.
Okay, but you're sort of contradicting yourself. That man didn't laugh at all.
But you're saying I...
And you're saying Phil shouldn't have laughed that
hard. No, I didn't say he shouldn't have. Well, sometimes Phil, you know, overdoes his role.
Well, be more gloomy, Phil.
As the giggle girl.
But Phil...
sometimes Phil over... Listen, I've said some things that have sent him on the fucking floor. I go, Phil, it's not that funny.
But Phil's laughter there was consistent with the laughter at the table yesterday.
So he says this. I know. I had the same reaction, like... Yeah, cute. I mean, I got it, and it's cute. My point is, this point of this discussion is that I was fascinated by the raucous laughter it elicited.
Howard, how often have we had those conversations over the years? It doesn't take a lot to please the masses when it comes to goofy little, humorous things.
Ditties.
Yes.
Ditties.
I've been telling that bastard since the 70s.
Well, I've never heard it.
My buddy Doug first told me.
Yesterday, I would tell you right now, if that's the laughter it got, you should close with it.
You can. You know what?
You should say, yeah, well, they're 16 because one of them's a tenor. Good night, Huntsville.
Here's the thing.
What?
I've been using it since the 70s. I'll retire it, and I'll hand it over to you. You can have it.
You know, it's very sweet of you.
Okay?
Yeah.
So when you're at your golf club there, which is lovely and beautiful, you can tell that to all your buds.
I will.
Just make sure the Nibby's not there, because he's heard it.
There's 16. Why is that, Fred? Because one of them's a tenor. All right, Phil. So let's get back to Phil. You still laughing about it?
I am. It's actually quite cute.
It is.
Yes.
So is Fang.
So Fang and you.
I'm here to suck your blood. Hell.
So your girlfriend Fang, which we'll now be calling her Fang.
Fang.
Fang. Whatever you like it.
So you and Fang are having some words, some
yes,
trouble.
Wang and Fang have had a couple of arguments. Well, because yesterday we were trying to plan out our trip because...
Because you're going to Cambodia. For people who don't know, Phil's on his way to Cambodia
in around
a month.
Oh, yeah, while we're all off. And the thing is, I was planning to stay in Phnom Penh, which is the capital, but she wants to go other places. She's like, do you want to see the temples, the Angkor Wats, as they call it over there? And I'm like, well... If we're going to go that far, can we go to Laos? And she's like, Laos, I want to go to Thailand. And all of a sudden, we have a bit of an argument.
Ooh.
Well, not a very angry one, just what's going on.
She's saying if we're going all the way to Laos, we might as well go to
Thailand. Because it's the same distance.
I'm sorry, is that the punchline to a joke?
One of them's a tenor.
I apparently don't know.
but I just, we're trying to settle on places to go. Like, she wants to take me places. I'm like, I want to stay in the capital. I want to see her.
Okay, but she wants to take you places. You suggest a place, and she's down your throat.
she's been there. She's been to Laos, and she thinks that it's probably not worth the trouble. It's too far.
That is
so hilarious. you're like, no, it's not 8, it's 16, because one of them's a tenor.
Who are these Laotians?
Jerry Seinfeld in concert at Casino Rama. How many balls are there in the quartet? You'll see Seinfeld from the TV show and Stand Up and Blama because one of them's a tenor.
Joke's a can't-miss hit. So when you're with a group of people and you really want to titillate them, try and get the conversation over to music somehow.
Right.
And then pow!
That's the one! So what you do is somehow subtly start thinking about music.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, speaking of music, before we forget, there's a new channel on SiriusXM. It's channel 105. The channel is called, I believe, Volume.
Really?
I think it's called that. Can you look it up, Phil? Yep. Because, every once in a while what they'll do on Sirius is they'll give over a specialty channel to, like, Billy Joel or David Bowie after he passed. They'll do that. And they've got this channel now. I thought of you last night because it's a talk channel about music.
Oh,
it's really smart. So it's wall to wall talk.
Is it out of the states?
It's called Volume Channel. I'm sorry. Is it 106?
Yeah.
106. So they play music. Okay, so here's how they describe it. SiriusXM's first ever all-talk radio station dedicated to the topic of music. It's really a good idea. It brings the music conversation directly to listeners, live daily shows, weekly specials. I don't believe they are... No, I don't think they're playing music. Like, right now, they've got, like, a morning show talking about, you know, music and tours and social trends and releases. Anyway, last night, I'm listening to it. And they had this really cool little game show. By the way, so far, are you with me?
Mm-hmm. No, I find this very interesting.
And the game show was they had like expert from the 70s music, 80s music, 90s, and now. And they had like, it was like a cool little contest. Mm-hmm. They had all these experts. And then what they would do is they'd play a clip of music. The expert would have to say the song, the title, the year. And it was neat. And I thought, this is brilliant because, you know, I thought of it because that's where FM needs to go.
Oh, Howard, that's just exactly what I was going to say. You know, because I often say, you know, I think it's almost funny that FM. Radio stations still play music because there's absolutely no need for it. That's what it should all be about. If an FM station does play music, it should be spoken word about the music, educate you about the music.
Right.
That you're playing on your iPod nonstop and everything.
Well, leave it to SiriusXM to figure it out. A talk radio channel about the subject that most people love talking about, which is artists and songs and concert tours and things like that.
And Q107, The Edge, all these rock radio stations across the country over the past few years have told their jocks to shut up. People don't care about that. Just play the music and tell them what fucking temperature it is outside.
And the great thing is, what people want is what this channel is giving them, which is, I get the music. I got the music. I got all the music I need. Tell me about it. Give me some information I don't know about it.
That's right.
Or like the show I listened to last night. I was coming back from, I dropped my daughter off at, she has a friend around Dovercourt and College, let's say. So to get back to where I live, it's not far, but at 7:30 at night, it's a bit of a trek just because of traffic. So I had a half an hour with this channel. And you know what I love about Sirius is, and we do this on Canada Laughs and Canada Talks here in Canada, is we will play the promos for other channels.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested, so I immediately went over to it and I listened to this little game show for a half an hour. I thought, this is so smart. Because they got me, didn't play one song, but there was neat information about songs.
And what would you do if you wanted music? You'd go to one of the many.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we went golfing with a young woman yesterday. It was beautiful.
We're going to get to the whole Fred and I golfing
But
thing.
The conversation we had, and I said to her, what radio do you listen to? And she, again, and what would she be in her 40s, maybe?
Minimal. Minimal
she
40s.
She says,
I like that, Tracy. Minimal 40s.
No, she made the point, really, that she only listens to AM radio. And it's amazing how many people are saying that now. When they listen to the radio, it's only AM for spoken word information. I said, what about music? She said, I'm hooked on Sirius. She said, because of all the different genres, depending on what mood I'm in, I can go right there for it. And so the point being, you could listen to that channel 106, 105 volume, right?
Yeah, it's channel 106.
And if you're thinking, hey, man, now I want some tunes, anything you want along the spectrum. FM can't do that for you.
You know, it was cool. One of the things they did, again, you know, they had an expert, a person whose specialty was the 70s, and they were all like music writers, or one was a former VJ in the 80s. And it was just all people that had an interest in music, the kind of thing Alan Cross would kill on, right?
Well, I was thinking that when you told me about this, I know Jeff Woods is putting together a new show. Wouldn't that be a good spot for him?
It'd be a great spot for him. And well, same with Cross.
Yeah.
Well, let's do more good for others.
No, I know. I want to get that and send it to Jeff.
Send him a note
saying, so, check that out, talk to these people.
What was cool about it is they would play clips of songs, and of course, you know, all in your and it, listen, I've been a DJ for some time, and I'm not sure if you know that. And but even me, I was kind of like, oh, I got that right away, or then there would be a clip, I'd go, I'm not really sure what it is, and it's a very engaging show, and then they would talk about it. They'd say, okay, there's Animotion from 1985, and blah blah blah, and they'd give you a little bit of a story or an anecdote. I thought this is a pretty smart idea. And it is exactly what they should do on FM radio in this city. But they won't.
Remember?
Because everyone needs to hear the Lumineers again.
Yeah. Another brick in the wall.
No, you know what's that one that I hear all the time? It's becoming Muzak. It's AWOL Nation. What is that song they did? The big AWOL Nation song?
Even that.
No, it doesn't.
That the band from the Strumbellas, too. Like, Jesus Christ. I'm happy for their success, but same thing. I mean, that song is played fucking worldwide.
Anyway, so where were we, Phil? You and Fang are having words. Your cat needs to be de-stitched.
Grab you by the pussy.
And we're going to grab you by the pussy. And 16 balls. It's one of those jokes. I would screw it up. 16. How many tenors have 16 balls? Hey, tonight?
You'd get all nervous. You'd be on the stage going, I'm about to tell Fred's joke. You'd get all nervous.
That's right.
And then you'd fuck it up.
I would. I'd be like, hang on a second. How many tenors do you get if you touch 16 balls? I mean, Huntsville, come on. Seriously, that's as hard for me to understand as Ron James. So, anyway, Phil, do you feel like you're getting enough airtime?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, more than that.
Anyway, yeah, check out this new channel 106.
I'm quite excited about that, actually, because driving along the car, too, as you say, it would just be fun.
It is fun, and it's a smart idea, and good on us here at SiriusXM, Channel 106. Now, we got a lot to talk about. We got to talk about Fred and I golfing with the sweet, wonderful Sherpa that is Tim Niblett. Speaking of which, we got to figure out something. Remind me today when the show's done, because he was supposed to be on tomorrow, but we're not sure, because he is coming on Friday on our grand opening. And by the way, it is going to be a great day. We have Tim is going to be there. He's got a special presentation for us and listeners. The Humble and Fred Sherpa cups will be unveiled. Yeah,
like an actual trophy or
no mugs?
Oh, mugs.
Oh yeah.
How many mugs in the quartet?
The tenor.
Four. Because they can only use one mug. Sorry.
And two girls, one cup, and stuff.
How many? Oh, Jesus. Anyway, but I'm going to tell you.
God, Jesus.
I just give up. You know, I don't even know why I bother. So, Tim's going to be there. Dan, scheduled to appear. Dan Duran.
Dan Duran.
Jeff Lumby.
Mm-hmm.
Vagina Juice.
Beautiful.
Classic.
Vagina Juice.
But he won't tell the story.
Oh. Why?
He's got another story.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's fine. He's
he
told
said
the
to
story.
Me on Sunday, he goes, oh, you don't expect me to tell that Vagina Juice story again? You mean the one that everyone loves? No, I wouldn't want you to do that.
Well, why don't we just get the recording of it, and then before he gets there, play it?
Maybe. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, we could.
Because it is a great story. If he doesn't want to tell it, then we'll just play
so.
It.
But Jeff is going to come on. Dave White, who saved your life. The reason that we've been able to do this for 5 years is one of my best friends, Dave White, who saved Fred's life in the 401, will be there.
Yeah.
Scheduled to appear. Luca Rossi. Lots of our listeners, apparently, Michael McGregor, the tart maven, mm-hmm. is putting together a lovely array of butter tarts. He even sent me a message last night saying, hey, do you want me to bring you some special tarts? You know, I've got some weed oil or some shit. You know, I'm like, yeah, well, do your worst.
That's great. And we'll have the police converging on the new studio on day one. Oh. Super.
Why? Because we've had some contraband butter tarts?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd last about one day on Ray Donovan. Seriously.
I'm looking for that. Where do I find that?
It's on Couch Tuner. It's not on Netflix.
Okay. And it's not on.
I'll hook you up.
Show Me's on its way out. So I don't think it's on.
You'd
there.
Love Ray Donovan. It's so cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. So lots of other people. And I don't know how many people we can accommodate in that studio.
It doesn't matter.
But it's going to. What
because
if it's
they
raining?
Go downstairs? No, they can go downstairs. Why not?
And do what? Just hang
around.
There?
And we'll. Today we'll hook up the wireless speakers.
Yeah,
the set we have is fine for that application.
And what about this? What about speakers in the main studio? What are we doing for that?
Well, we could use those shitty ones that we used. You know the ones we had in the studio, the black ones. We can put those downstairs. So if people come tomorrow or on Friday and they're downstairs, they'll be able to hear the show. Mm-hmm. Those beige ones we are using all along. We can use those just for Friday for up there.
Or why don't we just run over to the Koski?
Mate, well. Okay, what? But well, I have to go to IKEA today and get some carpets and what have you. No, I could, but I want to get the right thing too. Where's the Best Buy?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it's at Sherway Gardens.
Oh, I don't like that. Sherway. You know what? Here's the problem with Sherway. They build all this new stuff there, but everything they build takes away parking.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried to park there?
Yeah, I parked there last night. It took me 6 seconds.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, I'm just telling you, I dropped Spencer off. I picked Spencer up from her job after we played golf, and I dropped her off at Sherway.
Yeah.
And I went to home for like a half an hour with the dog, and then I went back to Sherway, and I went to the gourmet food fair. I found a place to park at like 6:30 at night. It was fine.
Oh, okay. Well, I always have trouble parking.
No, it's a huge mall, but I know what you mean.
It's not bad during the daytime.
Well, this was a 6:30 at night.
Yeah.
And I went to Culture's, and I had a beautiful sandwich for dinner.
I had Freshy for dinner.
Did you really?
Not the drink.
No, I know.
Yeah.
You know, right now, it seems that the edamame and pea salad, or the edamame salad, has become the new thing. Because everywhere I go, they have it at Salby's. Salby's? Is that how you pronounce it?
Salby's!
They have it at Salby's?
Salby's!
What is your deal? Do you, Kyle's just sitting here going, I like it better when you guys aren't in this room.
No, I don't. I like it better when
Do you know what Salby's is?
I know what Sobeys is.
Yeah, well, I pronounce it Salby's. Okay, it's a quirky thing.
Are you talking about the grocery store or some sort of restaurant?
I just mispronounced it. I just fucked up the pronunciation of Sobeys. But right now I see this edamame salad everywhere. Everyone's doing it. When they have it at Culture's. I bet you they have it at Freshy.
At Costco, I want you to slide over there and look in their salad. They have like a Brussels sprout and sort of cabbage. And the Brussels sprouts are like raw, chopped up. And with this dressing, it's outstanding. A little bit of cheese with it. It's very good. You'd like it.
Maybe
it's
I'll slip over to Costco this afternoon and pick up some broccoli.
Mm-hmm. Do you like Brussels sprouts?
I love them.
So do I. But these are like chopped raw Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
It's a lovely, and the tangy sauce with it. Very good.
But I got to, the only reason I'm hesitating is I'm going to have to go there and hook up my Costco card. It's going to cost me $60 or something.
You know what? I'll slide in.
Nah, you don't
do
it.
No, I'll get you one.
Let's get some speakers.
All right. Does Costco have those?
Well, I don't know. But Friday's the big day.
We've
really
been spending
excited.
A lot of money lately, buddy.
Yeah. You're just getting a taste of what it costs for me to get out of that that house in Oakville and get you. You don't even want to know. You shit yourself. Anyway, we're really excited to have everybody there on Friday, our grand opening. We don't know. At the beginning of the show, you may have heard a little promo thing, but we're not really 100% sure where we're going to be tomorrow. Today's a big day because, as I looked last night, the great Jim Carr, first name the great, Jim Carr hooked up a lot of stuff yesterday. Very precision.
Intricate.
Very intricate work. He was using your reading glasses. That's how intricate it was.
He cooked it was all these little wires, and they have to go into this panel that goes into the main board, and it's like, it's crazy.
He's got way more patience than I do,
How do you know?
Who knows? How does anyone know anything?
He grabs a wire and then puts it in this big panel with all these little teeth on it and then solders it. It's like,
okay.
How do you know where that goes and why?
Well, maybe that's because he's the head of radio at a huge radio college. Where'd you go, Humber? You guys are Humber guys? Well, that's pretty good. It's not, you know, Jim Carr good, though. If you went to Jim Carr school, you'd know how to... You okay over there? Wow.
It's a farty farty.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm glad you're over there. Anyway, the show has got to start now. At some point, we need to do this show. We're here at Sirius XM in Toronto. It's great to have you along. You know, it's been a lot of American bashing the last, you know, couple of months. You know, everyone's making fun of America because, you know, you got a guy running for president who's like a circus performer.
And even beyond that, you know, a sub-theme to that is, you know, pick your poison. I mean, Hillary's going to win, and she might ultimately be a good president, but there's, you know, you hear that a lot. It's like, I'll hold my nose and vote for her, or pick your poison, or whatever. It's a tough time for them right now.
Right, and so the Washington, I don't know where how this came about is an agency in Toronto made a video featuring Canadians telling Americans all the reasons we think you're already great. Despite a, tough election season and a lot of people ganging up on America. And really, it's been kind of fun poking fun at, you know, Donald Trump and the whole, you know, whatever. But, you know, I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of great things about America. We Canadians appreciate a lot of things about America. And so this company, this ad agency put this together. I'm going to play a little bit of the video. And then we can discuss it a little bit. It's going to take a second to load because for some reason my computer doesn't work in the studio. Anyway, this story's been picked up by the Washington Post.
And tonight's the third and final debate.
Can't wait. Episode 3. It's better than any series I've
watched. What time does it start?
I think it's 9 o'clock.
Well, that's good. Watch the Jays force a game 6. Then I'll watch a bit of the Maple Leafs game. And then I'll maybe watch some debate. My whole night is planned.
When do you do your set over at the Brampton Giggles? When do you go up? This isn't loading now.
Oh, come on. How can that be? I played it instantly.
I know, because for some reason, 12 feet away from where you are, the computer doesn't work. There it is. Leave it to Canadian. Watch my boy Kyle make this shit happen. Kyle. Phil's a super anti-Semite. Here we go. See, I'm still waiting for it to load.
Hi, America.
What's up, America? Hey, guys. We're just up here in Canada talking about how great you guys are down there. And we thought we'd just send you a little bit of a love note.
We're big fans. We like you guys.
We know you've got some really big decisions to make. But as you're thinking about your future, we just want you to know that...
You guys are great.
You really are great.
You invented the internet.
You guys are going to get humanity to Mars.
Your national park systems protect some of the most beautiful places on Earth.
All your diversity and all your openness.
The fact that you're such a giving nation, over $250 billion a year is donated to charities.
So wonderful and warm and accommodating.
When things are tough, you fight to make them better.
The disability rights movement in America is amazing.
You are infectious, entertaining.
Your gift to the world of jazz music.
Bluegrass music. R&B.
That's kind of cool. I like that. I thought it was an interesting, you know, leave it to us. Leave it to Canadians to do the right thing.
No, absolutely. No, I mean, that is, that's, What a nice gesture that is. And I wonder how much that will be celebrated. I mean, as you say, that's from the Washington Post. And I'm dating myself, and this won't mean a lot to a lot of people listening, but, you know, a guy that worked at News Talk 1010 CFRB years ago, remember Gordon Sinclair did that sort of tribute to the United States. And that exploded. It exploded.
That would be like 40 years ago, Gordon
would
Sinclair.
It be?
Yeah, something like that. I remember
And I forget what they were going through at the time, but something, some crisis. And he wrote this wonderful thing about, you know, chin up because, you know, you're a world leader and you're to be applauded. It was great.
The I think the hashtag is Tell America It's Great. And one of the tweets I like is... said, Canada is that best friend who comes over on the worst day of your life to remind you why life's still worth living.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's maybe overstated, but I mean, again, we've all been beaten up on America, and a lot of it's because of Donald Trump. A lot of it's because of Hillary Clinton. We've been talking a lot about America in a negative way, and I think it's kind of a nice palate cleanser, if you will, that, you know, this has come up, and it gives us a chance to think about, and I did when I saw it this morning. I thought, you know, that's right. I mean... You know, I've made a lot of disparaging remarks in the, to be humorous, but there's a lot of things I love about America.
Same here. I mean, look, I probably go there, you know, on average a couple of times a year.
Me too.
I mean, it's a go-to place, and the reason I like to go there, I mean, is because just, you know what you're getting, right? When you go to the United States, you're getting... You know, cheap booze.
Wait a second. So, yeah.
No, really.
Cheap booze, warm weather.
Cheap booze. You're really, and, you know, say what you want, but you're safe. You know, you don't have to worry about drinking the water. I mean, or eating the food. There's all sorts of reasons why it's just a great place to go.
You know, in a calendar year starting last December to this December, I will have been there, Florida, Greensboro. Rochester and Florida. I'll a minimum this. It'll be four times in 12 months.
Yeah,
that I will have visited. And there's lots of things about America. My favorite place, my favorite city in the world that I visited so far is New York. I would go there. If I had the money, I'd go there every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of great things about America. And if you want to tell them, go to hashtag Tell America It's Great. Well, we have a long segment coming up about our golf day and how wonderful that was. Plus the Blue Jays. I listened to the game. I was in my car for a long time yesterday after I left you, between picking my daughter up, dropping her off, picking her up, going to dinner. And it was interesting because I heard almost half the Blue Jay game on an American, on the voice of the Cleveland Indians.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Right.
Because they were the ones that SiriusXM picked up as the broadcaster.
I'm surprised because usually they do the home team.
Well, it was just the first channel I landed on.
Oh, okay.
Happened to be the Cleveland feed.
Right.
Okay. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Because you got a real flavor of how Cleveland supports its team. And it was pretty neat. And again, baseball on the radio is fantastic. So I got a real good sense of the game. And
no, I'm the same way because... you left the golf course a little earlier than I did yesterday, so the game started at 4, so I probably watched the first couple of innings there. And it wasn't like, I don't know if it was a hockey game or even a football game, and I'd go, geez, I want to be home for the whole game. But just sitting there knowing that I would listen to Jerry for maybe 45 minutes on the way home was cool. It was like, oh, that's, you know what, I'll watch a bit, and then I'll be able to listen. And I was just cool with that because baseball is so...
Because you can fill in so much of what's happening.
That's right.
You know, even though I had another person in the car, because the SiriusXM readout, what is that called, Kyle? How it reads out on the transmission?
We just call it the pad here.
Okay,
like that right there, for example, where it says the name of your show, and it might say the score of the game if you're listening to sports, right?
Yeah. So when you're in the car, so the MLB has the it tells you, you know, what inning you're in. Mm-hmm. The count and the score. So, I mean, I'm talking to my daughter, and I sort of have it on, but I could still just kind of keep up with what's going on. Then when I would drop her off and I was in the car by myself, it was great. And you fill in a lot of the blanks. So I feel like I got to the sense of the game without actually ever having seen it visually, just by having it on. So we'll talk about where you think they are, what's happening with the actual, you know, do the Jays have a chance, all that kind of thing.
As long as there's a game, there's a chance, my friend.
It's Humble and Fred Radio. the Humble and Fred characters firmly in place. And great to have you along. Don't forget you can crowdfund our shit or go to our Facebook page for all the details. Around North America on SiriusXM and around the world at humbleandfredradio.com. We're back in a second.
I just can't wait until tomorrow comes.
All right, around North America, live on SiriusXM, but you knew that if you're listening to us, because it says Humble and Fred on your little readout there and your transmission. What do we call that around here? The pad. Hey, man. On the pad, it says Humble and Fred.
Come with me.
If you download the show, this is the Wednesday, October 19th file. That'll be available to you kids if you missed anything at humbleandfredradio.com. And just a note, we end the live transmission around 9 a.m. It begins again if you miss anything. For instance, if you miss this upcoming in-depth interview with veteran broadcaster, raconteur, and bon vivant, Ralph Ben-Murgy, it'll repeat a couple hours from now for the West Coast. In the meantime, we'd like to remind everyone that this program is baked fresh each and every day, brought to you by...
It's no wonder, people.
Hey, everybody. Pizza, at Pizza Pizza, pick up an extra large 16-inch pepperoni pizza for just $9.99 and get a Pizzability scratch and match card to win prizes like gift cards, cash, and one of 10 trips to Universal Orlando Resort. So many Pizzabilities at Pizza Pizza. I'm going to make a call here for Sleep Country because we're going to get lots of retirement Sherpa stuff when we talk about the epic golf match.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So let's remind everyone that this country is held together by, you know, certain things, our mutual love of each other and Sleep Country and our love of a good night's sleep. Hey, kids, buy a bio... Hang on, here it is. Buy a bio soy pillow and get a second bio soy pillow free. That's right, at Sleep Country. At Sleep Country Canada, they've got sleep experts. And of course, excuse me, no matter what happens with your bed, if you don't like it, you bring it back. Right now, the hot buy is a queen set from Sealy at only $639 in details and some great initiatives. Only at Sleep Country Canada, once again, we ask the rhetorical question... Why would you buy a mattress anywhere else? Really? Really? Are you still buying mattresses? Here's a better question. Why do other mattress stores even exist, Fred?
Don't know. Well, they're dropping like flies anyway, Howard.
You know what? This will be interesting. For very many years, this gentleman was a source of mirth and merriment for many people. He hosted one of Canada's few attempts at late-night television. He has been a broadcaster on CBC Radio, on Jazz FM in Toronto, a stand-up comedian. I met him for the first time on a Wednesday night in cold Winnipeg, Manitoba. I was working at a comedy club, and he was hosting the Wednesday night part of the show, and I looked up in interest and went, this guy's pretty funny. What's he doing living in Winnipeg? Mm-hmm. And a friendship was born. Please welcome to our program Ralph Ben-Murgy, everybody.
I'm applauding myself.
That's
inappropriate. I just wanted to create more noise at that point.
Ralph Ben-Murgy, a lot of people have been entertained by you for many, many years. And recently, there was an article. I'm not sure, did you write this article or was it about your move?
It was about my move. It was in Toronto Star, I think, is the one you're referring to.
Yeah, and we both saw it. We said we should, because it was a big story. Well, I want to talk about that. But it's a story about Ralph, and Fred and I almost simultaneously said, you know, we should get Ralph on the show.
Isn't that lovely? Well, I miss you guys. I was thinking, I was driving here in the fabulous traffic this morning, and thinking, I actually remember the last time we did something together, and it was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long time ago. And
what was that? Because we don't remember.
We don't remember how we got here.
It's like
morning.
When somebody comes up to you and says, you remember me? Interviewed me 8 years ago. And you're like, are you serious?
Yeah.
God love you, but 8,008 interviews later, I don't think I can.
But it's funny you say that, because that happens to all of us, you know, with listeners and interview people. And it's tough sometimes for people to, especially because as the three of us have been in the public eye a long time, and people love to make a connection, and they'll say, do you remember that thing you did when you guys talked about this? And I used to go, no, are you kidding? Now I just go, yeah.
You see, my wife says, when someone says to you, do you remember me? It's a compromise at that point, because if you don't, what kind of a schmuck are you?
Exactly.
Because you don't even remember them. But if you actually say yes, which is what I do, my wife is like, why don't you just be honest with them? And I'm like, no, because I'll take cues from them. I'll just listen to them till I can figure out that we played ball hockey together, in high school.
But I used to be honest, and it was prickly. It was a prickly turn.
It seems ungrateful.
Why turn like an encounter with somebody who just wants a moment of connection into a prickly, fuck what a dick that guy was. So now I do this thing. I'll go, oh, yeah. And I'll do that. I'll say, when was that? They'll say, 1997. I go, oh, of course I remember that.
And the thing is, when it comes to events that they bring up, listen, in this profession over the years, there are so many events and there's so many encounters and there's so many people you meet. You lose track. But to those individuals who their lifestyle isn't the same, it's a big moment to them.
Well, you know, it's funny. I haven't been on in broadcasting for about 8 years now. I've been doing other stuff. And whenever I do it again, I remember that a part of you goes out there every day, right? There's a part that's out there floating around, and people walk up to you. Even when people walk up to people who've been in a radio interview and go, you know that thing you said about the tennis, and you're like, oh, you heard that? Because you're just in a room.
Sure.
And the guest is in an even worse situation because they really don't realize that people are listening. But I don't have that piece now that everybody else owns. And I'm not going to say it's better or worse. It's just different, right? To just go, that isn't sharing a piece of you every day.
And think about all the hours we've spent sort of sharing our lives, especially in the kind of show we've done. We talk about, some pretty raw things. And some of it's very heartfelt, and some of it's just innocuous. And it's those comments that some throwaway comment you made 20 years ago that someone goes,
that changed my life.
I changed my life. Or not changed my life. But they loved it or they remember it. You know, it's funny. I brought this up on the show recently. One of my kids' names is Spencer. And one of our fans or friends.
Spencer doesn't strike me as a nice Jewish name.
All
right.
It's a
Spencer.
Spence, it's a girl.
Is it in the Bible?
Yes.
Well, I missed that in Torah.
It's fun. That's funny because someone was asking me, how do Jewish people name their kids? I said, well, usually after dead people. But if you don't have a dead person, if you like a name and you don't have a dead person you like, what you do is you go to a rabbi and go, could you give me the Hebrew version of this? And
isn't it Spenceburg?
Yes, it's Spenceburg. It's Spence. It's Spenceburg.
What's Spencer?
So anyway,
I have Emmanuel, I have Jonah. You had a point.
The listener had pointed out that they were trying to come up with a name for their kids, and they liked the sort of girl for boy, boy for girl name. And lo and behold, a couple weeks ago, this kid was born, and they named it Spencer. And I thought, isn't that weird? And I shared it with her. I said, just so you know, you don't like your name sometimes, but it's now somebody's name, their baby, because they heard me talking about
you. She said, Dad, I'm busy. I'm doing a Talmudic contest festival next week, and
I really
got to nail this thing.
She says, Father, I'm studying to be.
You know, one other point on those encounters, and I've noticed this lately a few times. You know, you go places and people might recognize you, come up and say hello, but are you ever in places and people are looking at you, they know it's you, but they don't have enough?
Oh, no. It's worse. They go, I know you. And then they start guessing like it's a game show.
Oh, no.
And you're Jack.
That's true. But I'm talking about like being in a beer store and a guy will look at me and then I'll look
over. Oh, yeah.
He's looking at me, but he doesn't want to say, hey, are you Fred or hi, Fred.
Right.
And it's just, I find that a bit creepy.
No,
I do.
It's all part of
it. It's funny because right now there's a commercial running with you on it. It's some commercial you did
crazy
years ago.
10 years ago.
I've had several people say, did I see Fred on CP24? I go, I bet you did. But let me get my Fred app to check. We get that all the time. Hey, where's Fred? Hang on a second. Let me see. Oh, there's my app. He's in his basement.
Yeah, that's Brock Windows and Doors. I did that 10 years ago, and they're still running.
I like Fred app. I like that idea.
Well, we've been together so long, people just assume that when
you... How many years have you guys been working
1989.
Together? Wow.
Yeah, crazy, eh?
That's crazy. Because it's not easy to, you know, it's like it's a arranged marriage at a certain point, right?
This is the longest relationship I've ever had. and you know what? The nicest, the most.
It's because you don't sleep together. It works better.
Well, we stopped sleeping together, like a lot of couples.
And Ralph, we're in cruise control because. Yeah.
Well, no, but
the new Howard. What?
What do you mean the new Howard?
Oh, the new Howard. The kinder, gentler. Wonderful new Howard.
You know what happens. You know when you get a little older and you stop being...
It's the best part. I'm doing a workshop right now in Hamilton on aging and saging. How do you get older with respect to eldering? In other words, being actively engaged as somebody who has a piece of wisdom, because you've lived long enough, you earned it. But also, I had the first workshop, we started talking to people, and I said, so how do you feel about getting older? And everybody in the group is at least 50. Some 60, a couple 70s. I said, how do you feel about getting older? And half the people said, you know, I'm so scared of just decaying. And if it starts, just put a bag over my head and kill me. Mm-hmm. So we had this whole conversation about what we think of dying. Because dying is, first of all, you never talk about it. Complete bummer. Nobody talks about it. Nobody dies. And if they do, it's the worst thing that ever happened, right? It's like Woody
Allen.
It
doesn't get much worse than
that. Yeah,
and
then Woody Allen's thing, right? Yeah. Woody Allen's like, death, I get it. It's just not for me, you know? Right? So you get this sort of attitude of hating death. And it's not part of life. It's just this stupid thing that should never have happened to anyone. So how do you get towards it? How do you even – and then in I'm a spiritual director, one of the things I do. So on the way to the end, do we ever practice the dying thing? Because in many cultures, they practice dying through prayer, through different rituals.
Really?
Yeah, of course. So even in Judaism.
Don't look at me. Yeah. I'm from Moose Jaw.
Yeah.
I don't know about this. What is this Judaism?
I'm telling. Yes. So at night.
What you'll do.
It's a thing you practice every night where you basically have a prayer where you say, I'm out. I'm gonna, and I might not come back. So thanks. It was great.
those glass half full Jews.
That's right.
Well, listen.
You've been a lovely audience.
I don't know. Listen, I'm going to sleep. Who knows?
I love you, Hamilton.
Not wake up. Then Moses, what you'll do? Such a Jewish thing. Listen, my mother-in-law, my ex-mother-in-law used to do this. I say, yeah, well, Mama, the coffee's in the kitchen. Well, I'll go, God willing, I'll be back. Yeah, I said, you think he's in charge of your journey from there to fucking here?
Well, here's the thing. That's a whole other piece, which is God Santa Claus, right?
Yes.
With a naughty and nice list. Mm-hmm. Or is it a whole different thing? So anyway.
Please continue. You're a spiritual leader. You're talking about practicing death.
Yes. So these people, to them, this idea is repulsive. Like, why would you even get close to this? And I just think, you know, we're so lousy at it. And now we have laws that let you kill yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting place to be in.
Well, yeah, and how this began, this piece, is, you know, maybe mellowing as you get older. And I know it's cliche, and people say it all the time, but I truly do wish, in a lot of aspects of my life, that I could go back to myself at age 37, 6, 38, whatever, when I was really competitive and I was really hell-bent on things being a certain way, and now, I mean, you know, Fred jokes old Howard, new Howard, but I'm just a lot more... I have more perspective, and I know things will work out. And then, what I was going to say, though, we were talking about a thing that needed to be done for the opening of our new studio on Friday. And both of us were like, yeah, it would have been nice to get done. And I was a little bit peeved it hadn't, but we both know that eventually it'll just work out, or we'll die.
And then there's that thing again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but there is an equanimity that comes. So for some people, they get through
that's
first life.
That's the word I use all the time,
is
equanimity.
Egoic. You have an egoic part of your first life. So my first life was, I'm going to climb the mountain. I'm going to be a showbiz guy. I used to walk around on the way to Yuck Yucks and look up at the buildings and think, I'm going to own this town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hated it when I got to that top of that mountain. It sucked. Mm-hmm. So when you come back the other side, you got two things. You can either learn your humility, which is not just a... interesting, the word humble, because most people think humble means you shrink and you're nothing, right? But humility is knowing to what to be in the right situation. Sometimes you need to be the leader. Sometimes you need to just step back and let other people have their thing. Mm-hmm. So you can only learn that after you've been through that warrior nonsense. And it wears you out, and you realize you weren't as good to people as you could have been, all that stuff.
Yep.
Now you get to the second half, and it's there's just a generosity that you can get,
Yep.
Or you can be Donald Trump and just you're
speaking very amazing words. Like, mm-hmm. Sorry, I just had a stroke. You speak nice words, Ralph Mergy. Ben.
Spencer. Get the Torah.
But that's exactly what's happened to me over the last, few years of my life, that I feel like I don't need to, be as right as I once did. I don't feel like I need to be in charge as I once did. I am there are times when I naturally lead. I'm a pilot. I don't like to be a passenger, but I become a better passenger as I got older.
Well, and the tragedy in that is, that whole thing. You only get one chance at a first impression. Mm. And being in this business, people would be thrilled to meet us and expect you to be nice, and if you're not, they take that away, and they're more inclined to talk about that than what they expected. If you're a nice guy, I met him, he's a nice guy. I met him, and fuck, was he an asshole. And everybody they meet, they want to tell that story
that's
to.
That's how many bad news travels fast. Mm-hmm.
But how many guests have you had where you admired the work they've done in their life, and they come in and you think, really? But I don't give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Maybe they've been torched too many times by too many people who tried to make fools of them, and they don't have anything to share with people anymore. They're just like, what are you going to try to do?
Sure. And the three of us have interviewed, hundreds, if not thousands of people. And, lots of times we're no different. People come into our studio and they're dicks, and we think, I really wanted to meet superstar celebrity.
Yeah.
But who knows what happened in the moments prior to, or you're the 40th person they've met and they're doing promo for a movie, and you sort of, at the time, you get all...
We haven't had too many.
Not too many.
No. Nope.
We've been pretty lucky. Also, the kind of show we were able to do. Mm-hmm. We were always able to sort of be a little looser. But before I forget, have you ever told that story about, you want to talk about Jews practicing for death? One of the games I used to play with my girls when they were young is I'd get tired in the evening and they were like 7 and 10. I used to play this game. Come on, girls, let's pretend daddy's on his deathbed. That's a true story. And I would lie there on the couch and I'd say, Charlie, Spencer, is that you? Yes, Papa. And my wife would come in and go, what are you doing? I'm practicing for when I'm practicing for when I'm, my final moments.
So it's good conditioning,
it's good
for the girls.
So there are three things you're supposed to do when you're on the way out. The last words. First, what are you grateful for and what relationships mattered? Mm. Second, what do you regret in your life? And I never trust anybody who says, I have no regrets. What kind of a putz are you that you have no regrets? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really, you're that good.
What are you even doing?
Yeah, aren't you just Superman? And the third is, what do I want to leave behind? What's the last thing I want to tell people? So that's the practice.
So tell us what you've been doing. I sort of promoed this for you people listening around the continent. Ralph's been a broadcaster, a television host, a comedian, a guy that's had a smart guy for a long time. But now, for the last 8 years, and how this came to be is that, we were looking at this article. Ralph moved to, they call it the Brooklyn of Toronto. I don't know if that is true or not.
It's pretty true.
But what have you been doing for your life?
Okay, so I have done political communications. I did that for about 3 or 4 years. I was also working in executive management in academia. And I was working in innovation, helping Sheridan College here become a university, which is the path they're on, also become a spiritual director. And I do this creative problem solving workshops with this whole methodology from Buffalo State University. Has a 40-year-old department of creativity. They invented the word brainstorming, and it's a whole methodology of how you solve a problem. So
buffalo wings and brainstorming.
There you go.
That's amazing.
Right? So you're thinking buffalo, you're thinking Cheektowaga, you're thinking the usual stuff.
But a lot of people think of buffalo as great architecture.
Well, now it's
Frank
got a
Lloyd
renaissance
Wright.
Going on, just like Hamilton does. Old manufacturing cities being reinvented. So a lot of the work I do now is in innovation. So I do a lot of work. We're working on getting a center for social innovation in Hamilton. And social innovation, any business that has a social impact, that does something to make the world better, not just make them rich, right? So that's how you work with SI, as it were. So I do a lot of work in that kind of stuff. That's what I do.
So you have income from several sources.
Well, I scrape them all together.
Let me ask, are you a personal services company? Are you personally incorporated?
Are you B2B?
Are you B2B?
Are you B2B?
Are you B2C?
Are you B Corp?
I'm just beat off. That's what I am. I'm just beat.
See, and I have a 7-year-old, 11-year-old, 30-year-old, 27-year-old, and I'm a grandfather.
Cow. What?
Yeah.
You I got have a seven-year-old?
Two cohorts. I have a 7-year-old. So once people go, you're a grandfather, that must be so exciting. I said, I have a child at home who just had a tantrum because I took the tennis ball away from him. So no, I'm still kind of in that world.
And people could think the 7-year-old was the grandchild.
Well, he's the uncle. That's the weird part, right? Like, guy's an uncle.
So you have this is a second marriage. How long has that been going on for?
15 years.
And then you got some babies.
And it's my first wife's birthday today. And
isn't that wonderful?
We're still very close.
Listen, I had dinner.
Catherine, happy birthday.
Trust me, she's not listening. This is like
wow, that's kind of depressing.
Ralph, this is the witness. This is the witness protection program of radio.
No, Showbiz in Canada is a witness protection
right.
program.
Listen, I'm glad to hear you say that because it's I don't know why, but all my friends that have been divorced like me, they have such acrimony in their divorces. We were with someone yesterday that's going through a horrible thing, and yet Sunday I was with my daughters, some cousins I love, at my ex-wife's with my ex-mother.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't it be
well,
that
you know,
way?
The first few years can often be very
a little
raw.
Prickly.
Well, they're raw because, you know, you invested your life in someone else, and it's not working. It makes you feel bad about yourself. But, on the other hand, if you loved somebody for long enough, there must be something there, or else you have really lousy taste and judgment.
Mm-hmm. No, and I couldn't, you know, seriously, one of my best friends, I would say, is my ex-wife, and I love her. I talk to her every day. Ooh. We still parent these daughters. I mean, I have an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old, and there are issues every day.
Yeah.
Dude, I got to be honest with you. I don't think I could do a 7-year-old.
Oh, well, you know.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, really?
Really, after
From
all,
you,
this?
All this? We're trying to have a serious Jew to Jew. This is J to J discussion.
And this Fred guy shows up.
You know, it's funny I said that.
Fred's not in the Torah either, by the way.
He should be, though.
He's not dating Spencer, I'll tell you that. So get off her!
He is in the Torah, and they mention ass several times. You know, I said I don't do a 7-year-old, and I thought, should I say?
The bone of an ass, they say.
Unless they were cute. You know, Ralph Ben Murgi's above that, but Ralphie. Apparently he's
No. So remember Torah lifespan was 35 years.
Right.
By 12, you were getting on with it.
Sure. So let me rephrase that question.
Yeah.
I would have find it difficult to raise a 7-year-old child of my own loins.
Yeah, at this age.
At this age, whatever age you are.
You know, the thing is, you have to resign yourself to the fact that you are, for some reason, chosen to raise children for your entire life.
Wow.
That's just that.
It's true.
And listen, the kindness, the you know, beyond the would you just be quiet and stop whining part of being seven is the love of this little child. Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff comes into your life. The intimacy, the, you know, the kids sitting there hugging you, watching the Jays game. And that 7-year-old knows more. His ERA is only 4.95. That's not that good, Dad. And you're just like, I love you.
That's right.
You were a brilliant child.
Isn't that, well, I guess it's
so.
Just
yeah.
Lovely.
So you get a lot of stuff from it. You know, I think the first few years I was just like, oh, for God's sake, really? I'm at this age. I just have to put up with this stuff. But then I thought, what are you doing? Just relax into it. Because the other part is you're always doing the math. How old am I getting? Right. How long will they be in my life? I want to make sure that they remember me in a good way.
No, I hear that. Right?
But you can't really worry about that. You know what I mean? Because
I
it
do,
is
though,
what it is.
Because I'm Jewish.
No, and I understand
that.
What about this perspective? I have grandchildren. I have two. And my relationship with them and my perspective on them is so much different than it was with my own kids. I think because I can concentrate on a different level. Because you're busy when your kids and you know, and a lot goes by and you don't notice. What's it like having a grandchild and a 7-year-old?
Well,
are they the same in your mind, or
no,
is there some separation?
It's watching my son actually. How is he doing this fathering thing?
And he's 30.
He's 30. So I had my first kid at just 30 when I'd just gone to Winnipeg to take a CBC job, where I met Howard, who was from Alberta.
Moose Jaw.
Sorry.
I got Jews. I still have Jews.
But weren't you working at a Calgary?
No, at that time I was working. I was living in Los Angeles when I met.
Oh, well, you know what he did.
But I had worked at a Calgary.
You know what he did when? Speaking of what we were like when we were younger, I'm hosting. He's going on. He's just going on.
I was headlining, by the way.
Yeah. So what is he doing? He's instructing me on how to host. He's telling me, you know,
That's not even
it's slowed down.
True.
It's totally true. And, I'm thinking to myself, wow, who is this guy? Like, I've been doing this for years now, and the guy's telling me, I think you should, I think the crowd's getting a little slow. Maybe you should speed him up. Because he was worried about how it was going to happen.
How I was going to land him. Because here's what happened. Usually.
First he denies it, now he's telling me
here's
why.
What happened. Usually the host on the Wednesday, because the show really
it
starts.
It is a Wednesday, by the way, in Winnipeg. Yeah, okay,
and
continue.
And so usually you headline Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday, Friday, two shows Friday, mm-hmm. two shows Saturday.
Yeah.
But Wednesday you go on almost as a bit of a courtesy, you only do like 15 or 20. And I was sitting there going, is this guy going to go on? Like, how long is he going to do the hosting? Because you do a couple minutes off the top and then just keep the thing rolling. But Ben Mergus, he does like 15 off the top. Okay, fine. Pretty funny. But then he's doing like more time. Yeah. By the time I get on here, these 46 people who have come out to see comedy are going to be done. So maybe I mentioned, you might want to just, could we speed this thing along?
Isn't he just telling me how to do my work?
Okay, where were we?
Yeah, all right, sorry. So,
no, watching your son be a father, yeah.
Because you see, what animates in a lot of guys is child born must find moose. Mm-hmm. Kill moose, put on table. People eat moose in family. Go find more moose. They get kill moose.
Sound like Chief Wahoo.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wait a second. The last Jew that used moose in a joke was Woody Allen. Yeah. From the best.
I shot a moose.
Mm-hmm. I shot the moose.
I was hunting upstate New York. His provider thing kick in is so interesting to me because the discipline it brings to your life, because you can, screw around, do whatever you want. All of a sudden, it's no more fucking around. You got
to
get this
right. But I think what Fred was trying to get at, maybe I'm wrong, is that, there's a certain, I hear Fred tell stories of being a grandfather, and it's so sweet, and it's so intense, the love, and the time that Fred spends with his grandchildren is so filled with joy. But he was talking about being able to concentrate on it. But there you have that.
Yeah.
And
a seven-year-old could be your grandchild.
I can't concentrate on it. Mm-hmm. And it has.
And what are they like when they're together?
Yeah.
They're good, but, she's a little 8-month-old.
Oh, so she's just a baby. So.
She's just a baby. They're looking at her to just touch her head, mm-hmm. She's like, look, it's so warm, mm-hmm. Movable plates. How does that work? Mm-hmm. Three plates.
The skull is still settling.
What's that thing in the middle?
The perineum, perineum.
Oh, man,
is
that's downstairs.
That's downstairs.
The thing on the top of the head. There's
the yarmulke. The soft spot.
The yarmulke.
Press for more beer nuts, I think, is what that one is.
Well, it's an interesting time in your life and in our lives is kind of the beginning theme here. And Ralph picked up and he moved the family to about, for you people, I don't know how to give this. It would be about 40 minutes drive from where we are right now. Mm. We're in downtown Toronto, and Ralph's been a Toronto guy. And then there's been this sort of movement / renaissance of Hamilton, this downtown area. Hamilton, and you said this perfectly last week, Fred. It's got a bad reputation needlessly because there are parts of it that are stunning.
Well, most people just see it from the Skyway.
Right? That's
and
the steel, word,
and it's the steel mills when it's really a beautiful little place.
Well, there's fire coming out of a chimney.
No, exactly.
It's like, what the hell is that?
It's like, you drive by, it's like, are they filming something? Yeah. Why is this? Well, that smoke never stops.
Yeah, look, honey, Blade Runner.
That's right.
Just keep driving.
And not to mention the sulfur smell, although that's not as bad now, right? Since one of them are...
Well, no, I mean, actually, coal-fired plants, that's where most of the GHG was coming from. Mm-hmm. I used to be the exec advisor to the Green Party, so don't get me started.
Of course you did.
What the hell haven't you done?
Lots, but I'm not a reflexologist, but I did play one on TV.
So you decided...
Great detective.
You had a place in Toronto.
I killed on
you made a huge amount of dough on your Toronto place, obviously.
Yeah, you know what? It was, and no disparaging of Toronto. We moved here from Morocco when I was 2 years old. So my whole life has been here. I spent 50 years in Toronto of my life. But it's full. That's how I feel. I feel it's full, and I feel because it's full, there's a kind of a kindness deficit going on. People can't afford to be nice to you. They can't let you into traffic. They can't say hi anymore. Nobody even looks you in the eye when you're walking by. It's just, I don't need more people in my life. I'm in the Star Trek overcrowded planet and it's just I can't do this. And I just felt like there was a bit of a spiritual hole in this place for me. It had just become all about the details, all about the bills, all about the – every dinner party was about real estate. Mm. You know, a house wasn't a home. It was an equity flip. Mm-hmm. You know, do you know how much it's worth now? And it's like, who cares? You can't buy the next place.
You know, it's funny you say that. Yeah, I used to do this bit about it. It's like conversation starter 101 in Toronto. How much is your house worth? What did you buy it for? And then you got an hour. Like,
exactly.
But you're right. Like, who cares unless you sell it? And who cares unless you sell it and move to a cheaper area?
Cheaper.
But he's also nothing. Right about that being the last decade's worth of conversation.
No, absolutely.
Because of this overinflated fat market we live in.
Yeah.
So you got to a point when, okay, I think my life would be...
Yeah, I
got to
get out of here. So I start looking at Hamilton about 3-4 years ago. I started looking, actually. And I just thought, look at this. Fantastic. The housing stock in Hamilton, fantastic. It's got great bones as a city because it's a pre-World War II city. Mm-hmm. So it was built for people. Mm-hmm. It's like, it reminds me of my favorite Doug and Rob Ford line with the day after Rob won the election as mayor. The war on cars is over. Oh, that was a war? Wow. Poof. Wow. I'm telling you, what a victory that was.
Yeah.
Well, that auto thing was really starting to freak me out, let me tell you. So that kind of nonsense is over. So anyway, when you go to a place like that, it's a very walkable, beautiful city, actually. I live in the West End, but
up in the mountain, more in the city.
No, I live in the lower city, as it's called, just off of Lock Street, which is a gorgeous street with tons of stuff going on. But it's more than that. So when I got there, what I realized it really was, and I said it in the article, it's grit and kindness. Mm-hmm. People actually want to say hi to you, but there was a guy at McMaster who did a sociological experiment that was being videotaped of racial epithets at a bus stop. How would people react if there was one student was dressed as not a burqa, but in a hijab, and he was standing there and he starts mouthing off to her. Mm-hmm. And people, all of these people in Hamilton were like, hey man, you can't talk to her like this. Shut up. So they're all doing this and stopping the guy. One guy just hauls off, pops him, sends him to the sidewalk, and he's like, that. I'm a student at Mac. I'm a student at Mac. Don't kill me. But that's the kind of thing that you feel there, is that people are all in it together. We did a great Welcome to Hamilton event for Syrian refugees. They had the national, because one of the guy I bought the house from, actually, who moved one street over, is the manager of the national, the band. So they were headlining. We had a broken social scene. All these people showed up at this big church, and everybody shows up. We raised like 50,000-60,000 bucks for people that day. But what I really love is it's a city of scale. It's got 500,000 people. Everything is 10 to 15 minutes away. Mm-hmm. We would go, when we first got there, it was summer, and we go take our kids to a summer camp. GPS says 4 minutes, and we're like, yeah, by helicopter, 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Right? And we drive over there, and they're like, you're 26 minutes early.
That's
like, oh, crap. Sorry about that.
You know,
we'll just sit in the car.
Because, you know, I once in a while, I've gone back to Saskatchewan, and it's one of the things, you know, you sort of forget about being in a smaller community is that you can leave at the time. You can leave in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
In Moose Jaw, the joke is, if you're meeting somebody at 7, you can leave at 7. We just get used to being in this city, and everything is a 40-mile... Even yesterday afternoon, I left. We were hanging out, Freddie and I, and some friends, and I said, well, I got to go because I think it's going to take me 40 minutes or 35 minutes to get to where I've got to go.
Right.
It's only a 10-minute drive away.
Right.
But you're always doing that calculation.
Right. So that stress, plus still having kids that you got to schlep around.
Yeah.
So that stress became too much for me. So we start looking. And my wife was like, all the way till we actually got there, she was like, if you get this wrong, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Right?
Like, we're moving from Toronto.
Right.
And I'm like, we're not getting it wrong. This, I know that in my gut that this is a thing, and change is hard, right? So I just thought, no, we're going for it. And we went for it. The first day we get there, the neighbor comes over with strawberry-colored marshmallows and a card saying, welcome to the neighborhood. If there's anything we can do to help facilitate the move, let me know. Here's my phone number. Here's my cell number. Here's a $20 gift certificate to the Mustard Seed Co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning.
And meanwhile, your Torontonians are going, what's your angle?
Yeah, no, I'm looking for cameras.
Right, yeah, this has got to be some guy.
What are you up to?
I'm getting punked. This is no doubt about it.
I mean, Seed Co-op?
Yeah.
How dare you?
When we left Toronto, the people across the street went over from directly in front of us. I'm leaving in the car. The moving truck is gone. I'm about to wave goodbye, and I realize I've lived across from them for 10 years, and I don't know their name.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, never mind.
Right.
So I don't want to live like that, and I'm not getting younger. I want to be able to have meaningful interaction with people.
You know what another telltale? On a professional basis, people that I've got to know over the year, like Stephen Brunt and Damian Cox, all guys from Hamilton.
Stephen lives in Hamilton. So did Jeff Blair.
He still does.
Yeah.
They have the means to live in Toronto, but chose to stay there. And it tells you something about
the Jeff, community. I was talking to Jeff, and he says, we moved here 18 years ago. My kid was walking to school within 2 years, just old, like my 11-year-old does, by himself. We never look back, and we love living here because it's got community. And I grew up in an ethnic community that was self-contained of Moroccans, Spanish Moroccan Jews. There's not a lot of us.
Venn diagram is very narrow.
And where was that?
Marley and Eglinton.
It's funny because my ex-wife, she's a Montreal Jew, and they don't like the Moroccan Jews.
No,
they're
Southern Moroccan French.
I'm telling you, you say Moroccan Jew to my ex-wife, she's like, oh, those people, Moroccan Jews, the worst.
We have way better food than your people.
I don't have people. I'm from Moose Jaw.
Why do you say
I'm
that?
I'm a Moose Jaw Jew. I didn't have any Jewish culture.
Does your brother say the same thing? He's in Edmonton, right?
No, Edmonton and Calgary. Yeah, they all say. Listen, we are culturally bereft of a lot of the Jewish.
Fine with you?
Yeah. I mean, I get all my Jewish references I got from movies. You know, I didn't have a Jewish friend until I moved away.
And you don't think you have a Jewish sensibility to
Absolutely,
you?
I do.
So then where'd that come from?
Parents, identity. Right. I married a Jew.
Now we're getting warmer.
Yeah, of course.
Wait a second. All the food was beige.
Is wife number two a Jew?
No.
No, of course not.
Because you overreacted. That's all that is.
That's what we all do. Because the woman I was with after my marriage, not a Jew.
Hey, describe Jewish sensibility. What do you mean by that?
I'll tell you.
Describe it.
Fred's like, home run. Here's the interesting thing. Never once has anyone on Seinfeld identified as Jewish. Not one character actually, except finally at one point, Jerry's parents say something about a bar mitzvah. Nobody. It's like Avalon by Barry Levinson. The whole movie is about being Jewish in America. He never acknowledges that they're Jews because it's a Thanksgiving thing that they're based around.
But by the way, I was being somewhat facetious, but if you want to know what a Jewish sensibility is, it's Seinfeld. It's just the sensibility of the characters are very Jew-centric.
It's also a kind of in North American context, because it's not a solid, static thing. It's changed according to situation. If you ask somebody what a Jewish personality or psyche was in, shtetls in the Ukraine, it was mere survival and clinging together. Here, it's better than it's been ever. So the assimilation piece is easier, right? So they're not the same existential threat to being Jewish. So people don't have to really hold on to what it was that made them what they are. So here, lots of people like Howard have children named Spencer or Hunter.
He doesn't do a lot of Jewy things.
But the funny thing is...
But he is Jewy.
But I'll tell you...
He's a Jew. Jew. O'Reilly tried to nail Stewart and go, you don't even use your real name. He goes, you're right. My real name is Jewy Jew.
That's right. Jewy Jewstein. But I had this conversation. How Spencer... Because we love the name Spencer, so we called a rabbi and said, hey, we're thinking of naming this... We did.
You called a rabbi.
It's
not like you.
Wait, I didn't call him. I don't speak rabbi. Anyway, so we called a rabbi. My ex-wife called our rabbi that married us and said, we're thinking of naming this child Spencer. Now, here's some dead parents dead grandparents.
Right.
We had Samuel, and Samuel in Hebrew somehow related to Spencer in Hebrew. And so we got to name her Spencer because her Hebrew name was close enough to a dead Jew.
That's Ashkenazi, Eastern European Jews have to name them after a relative that's died. In Sephardic, which I am,
we
the
do
Spanish
too. He
Jews.
Died. No, he was dead.
But Sephardic Jews, what we are.
Dark Jews.
That's right. The ones who can know how to eat actual food. They're the ones who actually, it doesn't matter. So everyone in my family, extended family, the first male is named Reuben. And one of those patriarchs
after Reuben Kincaid from the Partridge Family.
How did you know that?
Or their sandwich. That's, I could have gone either way.
I always thought, why did Archie have X's and O's chart on the side of his red hair? Speaking of red hair,
Archie Reuben Comics.
Kincaid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Because one was a tenor. I don't know. Listen, kids, hang on a second. We got to take a quick break with our friend Ralph Ben-Murgi hanging out here at SiriusXM. Before we do, Fred, why don't we take a second and talk about our wonderful friends at FYI Music News.
Yes, we will do that.
Yes, well, as soon as we get that website
because I want to see what's going on today at FYI Music News. I have no connection. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do.
Slick.
Hey, how about this? Spinal Tap
sues... We're killing it!
Spinal Tap sues Vivendi for $125 million over profits.
What?
And this is no April Fool's joke. Yeah, that's the lead story today on FYI Music News. Pat Metheny, there's a feature on him this week. And Jan Arden, she's been inducted into the 2017 Canadian Music Industry Hall of Fame. FYIMusicNews.ca, a journal about Canada's music industry.
Absolutely. And before we go to break, let's talk about our good friends at Mitsubishi Motors of Canada. The no-charge winter tire package is up and running, up to $1,400 in extra values, including tires, wheels bouncing. Bouncing?
What?
Tires, wheels, balancing.
Flaving.
Nice
lady.
Installation.
Mounting.
And, of course, the amazing 10-year, 160,000-kilometer warranty. Yes. Get to know Mitsubishi at GTA Mitsubishi Dealers of Canada, gtamitsubishi.ca, and all across this great land. More with Ralph Ben-Murgi, more with Humble and Fred. Around North America, we're live as we are each day, and you can check out the rest of the stuff at humbleandfredradio.com. It's Humble and Fred Radio. Great to be with you. Our big grand opening, big studio opening is on Friday. Ralph Ben-Murgi is somebody that we've all known a long time. People here in Canada got a chance to see Ralph take a spin at being Canada's... Was it Canada's first late-night talk show?
No, Peter Zosky's.
Right.
90 Minutes Live.
Yes. And then after
that didn't
Ralph,
work either.
What? After Ralph, Bullard did it for a while. We were just talking about Bullard. People have been asking, hey, what happened to Bullard?
You guys just told me.
I sent him a note to see if he wanted to be on the show. I haven't heard back yet.
Well, so. Give him a minute. Right? I mean, if something bad happened over there, which I guess it did because he's not on the air anymore. Mm-hmm.
Now, you were doing the morning show at Jazz FM for a long
just
time.
Around the corner from this building, actually.
And
6 years I did that.
Did you enjoy that?
You know,
because people enjoyed you, Ralph.
Oh, well, thank you.
No, seriously.
We got some nice notes about you being on the show.
I did. I found because I was having two new children in my 50s that getting up at 5:30 was a bit daunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, ended up getting a bit sick after a while because it was just hard to every day get up. I enjoyed it, but I think I realized that broadcasting for me, I felt like I needed to learn more stuff I didn't know. I love when I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And I can learn and learn and learn. And I just felt like pushing the button again for me was not giving me any zits. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't going, oh, I'm excited about this today. Yet, there's something beautiful about being able to just know that you're in people's ear, right? So I really loved that part. But jazz is one of the musics I love. So I really got a beautiful education, like a PhD in jazz, just by being immersed in the culture. And the jazz culture in Toronto is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that there's a 24-hour all-jazz radio station, which just won a major award in New York, by the way, is fantastic. And it means something about this city that's really cool. Because almost nowhere in the world are there jazz stations. Charlie Watts came on when the Stones 6 years ago, or no, actually, this would have been, 10 years ago. They were going to do a tour, and they often would come to Toronto to rehearse. So he wants to be on the station because he listens online all the time because Charlie Watts is a jazz freak. He has the best jazz vinyl collection in the world. And it's cross-references, like high fidelity. So it's this guy played bass in this band, so I have this band beside this guy, which means that bass player in that band. So that's his whole thing, right? So he just comes in and goes, you don't know how lucky you are. Like the UK, he said, all we have are shows on BBC that are a jazz show. Mm-hmm. We don't have a station. So he really emphasized for us how important that was. It was very cool.
Earlier on in this in-depth interview, you said something about when I was, I think, at the top, you hated it. Did you not say that?
Hated what?
You just hated it when you got to the top.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting because, again, you were somewhat, Zawiski had the first talk show, but you did too. And it was just sort of weird for Canada, that whole concept.
I learned a beautiful thing.
What did you hate is what
I... Well, what I... Exactly. Okay, so more complex than that. What I learned was that, and this is not to say the word low status is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
What Canadians really love is not anything that they don't really love things that present themselves as high status, right?
Bingo. Yes.
So there we were, flashy and Toronto with no apologies and, you know, glitter. And Canada was
talking
like,
about the Ralph Benmergui TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Friday night show.
Friday night with Ralph Benmergui.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they didn't dig it. Just I had replaced Tommy Hunter, and I was replaced by Rita McNeil. So what does that tell you? Mm-hmm. Right. So these are people who are earthy, you know, down to earth, low status. They're not pretentious. I'm some guy with some weird Moroccan name, dressed up in, you know, a glitter suit. You know, but yet all I really wanted to do with the show was basically do the Canadian version of the Ed Sullivan Show. Mm-hmm. I had the plate spinner from Ed Sullivan on the show. I love showbiz.
But
I grew up with it.
And, right. And to be fair, I think what we're going to kind of get at, to be completely as authentic as guys can be, we were just like a lot of Canadians. We spent a good amount of time, you know, chirping you and chirping the show and being all bitter and mourning guys and fuck Ralph Benmergui. And then you look back, and again, as we spoke about at the beginning of this piece, that, you know, it was a time when we were very competitive and we wanted to get noticed. And, you know, one of the ways we got noticed in our 30s was to make fun of shit that was on TV. And
why him and not me? I got
absolutely.
From the whole comic community was like, really him? It should be me. And you know what? The thing that stopped me from really going for it is I realized there was a part of me that wasn't willing to go all the way to be fine. So Jim Carrey, right?
Right.
He was willing to commit body and soul to the joke. And what I realized is I'm actually a more serious person than that. And there was something – remember, the show I did before, it was a current affairs television program.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was – I can't bring myself to just go for that last mile. And then the whole thing became everybody's ambition at once, you know.
How long did it last, just to be – I'm just curious.
Season and a half.
And that was it. It was on Friday nights. It was a sort of a talk/variety show.
Yeah.
For some reason, I remember Lawrence Morgenstern was one of the writers.
Yeah.
Very funny guy.
You're going to be wanting all those fries?
That's right.
Yeah. Lawrence, let me eat.
Yeah, Lawrence.
Lawrence on the road. I'm just asking, do you want the fries?
Lawrence is one of those guys. He's a really funny Toronto comic, and everyone has a Lawrence Morgenstern story.
Oh, my
I think
God.
Mine was the first time I ever saw any really gritty porn was Lawrence's. But it was one of those things, and you described it perfectly. We're a low status. We like our low status vibe.
Yeah.
And
there's nothing wrong with that.
But it's one of the reasons Ron McLean has been so successful for so long because, you know, Jerry's high status bombastic, but McLean has stood the test.
No, but Jerry isn't high status. Jerry is a guy dressed in a jacket that would never let him into Holt Redford. I mean,
no, but he's high status. Yeah, I know what you mean.
He's wearing corny.
And that's why Strombo had a problem taking over that job. Exactly.
Strombo had my situation where somebody goes, let's get hip.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you get out there as the mascot of hip, and Canadians go, I don't want a guy with an earring. I want a guy who has corny jokes from Lethbridge, Alberta.
Right,
right.
Who is a ref in his spare time.
But an articulate guy,
of course. Ron's
guy.
A fantastic guy.
No, I know. We're not.
That attitude of why him and not me, do you think in the States it's more, look at that guy, I want to be like that?
That's right.
As opposed to,
well, but you see,
why
there
him,
you go.
Not me?
America.
No, in America, it's why not also me?
Well, that's what I mean.
America has
as opposed to.
It has a lottery personality mm-hmm. mentality. So when it's taxing the rich, why do average Americans actually resist that? Because they believe one day they'll be the rich.
That's exactly
right.
Everyone, the poorest person in America
right.
can hear that Donald Trump hasn't paid a lick of taxes, and they go, one day that could be me.
That's right.
It'll never be you, mm-hmm. but it's the
mentality.
The
mentality. It's Wall Street. It's Michael Douglas in Wall Street. You know, Trump is the personification of the capitalist dream. Right? You bust all the rules, you make all the money, you get all the women, you do what you want, but right?
Do you think that's healthy? Do you think that's...
No, it's toxic. And you're talking about a whole society that is now based on consumption and consumption. It's just devouring itself.
I've read this several ways in different publications about the American dream and how it really is a dream that is just there. It's available for everyone. The idea that anybody can be president. Yeah. It's kind of what Michelle Obama, you know, crystallized in her speech about, I wake up every morning in a building built by slaves. Mm. It is the quintessential rags to riches, if you want. But every American believes that. Whereas Canadians...
So was she full of shit?
No, I'm saying she's not full of shit. My point is everyone has that...
wait a minute. She might be full of shit, and God love her.
Well, but, as I said,
a billion dollars to run for president. Mm-hmm. $1 billion you got to have.
No, it's more about the symbolism of what I'm trying to say is that in Canada, mm-hmm. we don't feel that.
No.
When Ralph's doing a talk show... All of us, comics, broadcasters, are going, well, how come he got that and we didn't?
Yeah.
Whereas, as you said, in America, it's like, man, I want to get my own show, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's put on a show.
It's like they live in an altered state.
Well, they believe their hype, mm-hmm. and that makes them very jingoistic. So when they talk, they say that the president is the leader of the free world. If you really deconstruct what America is today, it is not about freedom at all. It is the most incarcerated country in the world. Mm-hmm. It has the biggest disparities in wealth in the world. Mm-hmm. It has huge problems. It's like that Jeff Daniels thing in the newsroom.
Yeah, that opening three there. Yeah.
It's the best ever.
Yeah. Right.
We're not the leaders in anything. Here's what it is for me. It's Scott Baio saying, it's the greatest country God ever created. Mm-hmm. Please just fucking kill yourself.
How dare you?
But no, it's just, it's what we talk about. You know, if an American or a Canadian politician, you know, talked about religion the way any American does, we'd all be a little off.
Well, I did for Vision TV, I did a documentary series while I was working at Jazz called God Bless America, because I noticed every political speech in America ended with, and God bless America. And then I thought, Canadian politicians, and I looked around.
Oh, never.
Harper tried it 3 times and dropped it. No one says it because we don't buy it. And that's the difference between the countries. Not religious difference, the largeness difference.
Right.
Like God bless America. Canadians just go, we live in the greatest country on earth, which, by the way, is another ridiculous trope, because if you live in Chad, you happen to think that that's the greatest country
of
on
course.
Earth. Everybody thinks where they live is the greatest country on earth.
Not everybody.
Well,
there's
on.
Some that don't.
Well, there are people
some
in Canada that,
know. That
don't. First Nations people in Canada don't think they live on the greatest country
that's
on earth.
Right.
But in general, the way you message yourself is with this kind of quasi-spiritual thing of nationalism.
Listen, I was in Reykjavik this summer, and they believe they're living, and they, in some ways, they are. Everyone can make that case. There are parts of Iceland that would make you think you're living on the best place on earth.
And that's it's a personal choice. But when it comes to what the difference is between us and Americans, we're just founded. Look, we were founded by people who ran a company that sold furs. Mm-hmm. The Hudson's Bay Company is the basis of settlement. In America, it was militaristic from the moment it started. It was a rebellion against the British. It was then a war on the Indian. It was all of these things, right?
And then it was a war between themselves.
Yeah, and then they killed each other. And then they thought, well, enough of that. Let's go kill other people. And then off they went. God love you, America. Because the other thing is, I work with people in America on spiritual issues. And this idea that all Americans are crazy, militaristic, there's so many amazing things about America. It's the worst and the best.
Before you came in, we were talking about this article in the Washington Post today about an advertising agency in Toronto that had put together a message.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, the hashtag, Americans don't suck. No, what is it? Americans, tell America it's great.
Yeah.
And because we've spent a lot of us, you know, especially broadcasters, have spent a lot of time the last 15 months, you know, joking about Trump and talking about what a bunch of, you know, dumb people they have down there. But then we sort of forget, but We all love it. We all, there are parts of it we admire. As one tweet said, you know, NASA alone should be enough to love about America. And on and on.
And you got to be careful about the idea that if you don't understand history, it will attack you. And it's that easy for fascism to become real, right? Germany, just before it went nuts, was the most advanced society in Western Europe. It had everything going for it. And then it turned into scarcity, which here is about the precarity of jobs. How safe do people feel in their work? Where's the loyalty from the employer? Where are the pieces that we used to – we had this dream, and with the death of the private unions, the death of the middle class followed. So we learned to call them union bosses and thugs, and they're just trying to take your money to do bad things. Well, if you want to think of a union, just think of your weekend and say thank you very much. Think of your health care. Think of your hours that you get to put in. Think of the safety of your workplace. All these things are now taken for granted, but now you're just a contract employee. Plug in, plug you out when they don't need you. So you don't feel good because scarcity is the worst thing to animate in people. So you have a whole civilization now being animated by Trump of fear, as opposed to what Obama sold 8 years earlier, which was hope. And then as people realize that the dream is a nightmare for them, in Ohio, they have the – where is crack being used more than anywhere? 50-year-old plus white males in America. People whose dream was crushed and have nothing.
Right? And that's me and Fred. But that's actually the slogan for our show. Right. People who had hope and now have nothing, / crack babies.
You have a 30-year-old son, you said?
Yes. I have 4 boys.
So how do you feel for them? Because I'm like, I have a 30-year-old, too. Yeah. And you talk about contract work and...
I feel like we have to speak up. I feel like I feel like the corporate agenda since Reagan Thatcher has been running everything.
Yep.
And I would love the conversation to be, what's plan B? This one's not working. What the hell is plan B? And why don't we start talking
about it? Do you think the next generation will correct it?
I don't think it's a question of correcting. We have deadlines that are already passing, like climate change, which everyone's in denial. You walk outside and you think, look, today, it's a beautiful day. What are you talking about climate change? Meanwhile, Miami is going to be a wading pool in another 8 years. So only like human nature is human nature. You go as long as you can, and then when the stuff is 3/4 of the way up to your neck, you finally go, I think we have a problem.
Yeah.
So we're boiling lobsters, right? So we got to figure out that there's real shit that needs to get taken care of. But we have to actually decide we want to do something about it besides click something as a like. You got to get off your ass.
Well, and you know, as part of this conversation has been your exodus, if I may, to Hamilton. I like to throw a little. The wind may blow over icy seas. I must be a Jew. I have so many Jewish references.
You see?
But your exodus to Hamilton.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people in Toronto, we spoke about this yesterday, about people in their 30s and trying to buy a house, and this idea that real estate will just keep going up because it has. It doesn't necessarily have to, and a lot of people might be doing what you do, which is getting out of here before the tipping point is going to come.
And you got to reimagine what success looks like.
Right.
Because success now is status. I tell my sons, I say, you're going to buy a house and think, nailed it, got the best one. You're going to go out and get your paper in the morning, look up at the house across the street and go, that one's a bit better. I kind of like the leaded glass
windows. And then they go, and let me guess, they go, Dad, the paper isn't delivered. It's not it's not Fred Mertz going out to the lawn going, morning, man!
Well, I sing Bewitched when I go out.
That's right. Bum, 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 bum. Now, for some reason, I can remember the tune to Bewitched, but I can't add fractions.
Here's one. Okay, so which theme song was this? Da-da-da-da-da-dum.
Love and Marriage?
Nope. It's the Smothers Brothers Show.
Oh, that's right.
Look at the young guys in the room. They're going, what the fuck is the Smothers Brothers? What is that, like a fluffer nut?
What about this one?
Oh, that's my three sons.
Okay.
What was one I was just doing? Bum, 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 bum.
Bewitched.
That's
no,
Bewitched.
No, that's I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, that's I Dream of Jeannie. Yeah,
Timberman, Major Nelson. You know, I did warm
What's
up.
This one? I love Lucy and Lucy loves me.
I don't know.
Wait, it's coming to me. Give me a hint.
Same joke.
Yeah. I once did.
And look at that, eh? Again with the Jewish thing.
I did warm up for a show featuring the guy that
Larry
played.
Larry Hagman. No.
No, Howard, the guy that played Howard.
Oh, my God. Right. Really? What was his name?
But he was a great guy. It was a big thrill because I grew up watching that show thing. And then I was doing audience warm up for this sitcom.
Was he funny?
Great.
Really?
Great guy.
Oh,
Bill Daly.
Bill Daly.
Great guy. And Connie Stevens.
Oh, my God.
And each week it was like, we had to call her Miss Stevens. Like, she's an old fashioned movie star. It was great. Ralph Ben Murgi, what a treasure trove of joy and nachas and nachos.
He's getting to it.
Mm hmm.
No, I can do Jew.
Yeah, you can do Jew.
See, I went over to my ex-wife's place and I Jewed it up.
Did you?
I throw the Jew stuff around.
Yeah, but you don't fast on Yom Kippur or anything like that. Which just passed,
no,
by the way.
I know it did.
Yeah, you know it's Sukkot right now. It's Jewish Thanksgiving.
Super. Are you doing something for Sukkot?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Well, putting a thing in your backyard?
Go to a sukkah. And then,
are you really? Yeah. Are you like a what level of observance are you?
I'm actually part of the Jewish Renewal Movement, which is I go to a conservative synagogue, but being Sephardic, I have that piece. But Renewal is about taking pieces of Judaism and trying to make something that people can relate to. Because people, their biggest complaint when I work as a spiritual director is that they don't feel anything when they pray. They have no connection to it. They want to. They have a yearning to have life mean more than the gas bill. You know, they want to do something with that meaning. So you try to help them to connect to being available to spirituality.
Okay, well,
you got a big fucking brain, don't you?
Is that why you're smiling? I think he hurled an insult.
And
not only, does he have a big brain? But I mean, you deal with a lot of people too that think a lot more than I do. I know that.
Fred, you're thinking.
I know.
Come How on, about you do me what?
But my connect, no.
Do I have a big brain?
You do.
No, it's a huge. It's like
I got a schwanz of a brain. Are you kidding me?
He goes to the schwitz. It hits the floor. His brain.
No, but I understand that. You know, there is. Listen, we make fun and mock religion. You know, I call this.
Everyone does.
You know, I call the people who believe in the sky Muppet.
Right.
But
I want to write a book called "God Is a Four Letter Word." I'm actually thinking of writing a book called God is a Four-Letter Word, because you can't they think if you said God, you just said, I'm an idiot with no brain and I'm irrational.
No, but what I was going to say, there's nothing wrong. But all through the religious talk we've done over the years, that I don't think we've ever said, there's nothing wrong with being religious to the point that as long as it doesn't get in the way of you being a human being. And some people that hate in the name of religion aren't being good citizens of the world.
Anyone can take any system and pervert it because they're immature in their practice.
And we've said that. I've said people that are devout of any fundamentalist, is a form of immaturity.
And there's a difference.
I've said it. It's immaturity.
So when I do the talks, I say, I'm religious. I said, excuse me, by the way, I'll start again. I did not just say, I'm a maniac who wants to kill people.
Right.
I said I'm religious, which means in my life I've decided that it's like if you want to have a six-pack, that's very nice. But unless you're willing to go to the gym, you're never going to get there. Mm-hmm. If you want to have a spiritual life, you can't hope for a nice walk in the woods every 3 years.
Right.
You've got to have a practice, and you've got to commit yourself to being available to what is bigger than you. And I don't mean a guy. I mean, if there's over 500 million galaxies in the world, you should at least bend your knee to the idea that whatever's out there and is responsible for this, it might be bigger than you.
And you know, it's funny because a lot of Jews, I've been doing some reading this last year, a lot of Jewish people are sort of leaders, spiritual leaders in the world of Buddhism.
Yes.
Because they've morphed their...
Jew-boos.
Jew-boos, they're called. They've morphed their... sort of what they like about Judaism, and they've taken it to the philosophy, because a lot of people don't realize Buddhism is a philosophy, not a religion.
And it's a non-dualistic. There's no God outside you and God in you, everything. And in Renewal, we say everything is God. God is in the laundry. It's an attitude towards
life.
But
a Buddhist would argue, or not argue, a Buddhist would profess it in this way, that they would say awareness is a connection.
Right.
And it's about being aware and connected.
I say available.
But it's the same.
Right. If you're meditating, it means you're actually still getting your mind to a stillness of availability. And the other reason that the Jubu movement is big is that a lot of mystery has been taken out of religion.
But, you know, the thing that we sort of, I would say I speak for you, the thing that we would hate are people that hate in the name of this pamphlet or book that they read that's 6,000 years old.
that they
of course, but people absurd. Can hate because you're on the wrong team in the bowling league. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. If
what are
people
you doing?
Want...
You're getting a newspaper. You're bowling. Who are you?
Hey, read Bowling Alone. It's a good book.
Ralph
Rand fucking Murgi.
Now I'm going to see if you get why I'm playing this. How good you're.
I'm Lester the ninth flight. Hello, Baton Rouge.
No, I don't know why. Besides, it's the lead in.
No, it's Donald Fagan.
Oh, it's just Donald Fagan.
And it's about a DJ at a jazz radio station.
Ah. And they love jazz.
Yeah. Let's look this way for a second.
And there's the chorus of this. Do we need to take a break? Or are we good now? The chorus is, he says he works at a station with jazz and conversation. It's one of my favorite songs. Okay, well, can someone get Ralph and score him on this ridiculous...
Goodbye, thank you.
Come back and visit us one day.
Anytime, guys. Yeah. Anytime.
What a pleasure.
Complete pleasure to see you both.
Really was.
What a lovely pleasure, care. Ralph. Yeah. God damn. Good to see you. With jazz and conversation.
Fantastic. How's yours?
Pretty good.
In and out.
From the foot of Mount Belsum.
What? Who had cancer?
Where was it?
I have three stents in my heart.
Okay. Do we want to do more with...
Radio. Holy shit.
That happened when you were doing more... Where'd you get cancer?
In my nose, which is why my nose looks different than it used to. See, I look a little... Face-wise, I've got a much thinner... I don't have my Jewish nose anymore. It's thinner... This part.
We're still on the air. I don't know what you think we're doing, but we're still talking to half a million.
For Grace.
Okay.
So you had cancer of
well,
the
can you
nose?
Come back again?
Squamous cell carcinoma.
Come back in a few weeks and we'll talk about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Seriously.
That's a wonderful thing. I'm all for it.
I want to talk about your
and
hurt.
And I didn't
too.
Conquer it.
No.
It wasn't a battle.
Yeah. I know. I love when people say that.
I hate that.
I did that thing about, he had after a courageous battle with cancer. It probably wasn't
I
that courageous.
I had a cancer. 50% of cancers are cured. I asked the oncologist, why don't people know that? And he said, you can't raise money like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You got to tell people they'll die.
We're going to get Ralph back.
Were you a smoker?
Oh, years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, this was a
he smoked
time.
Through his nose. It was a cool thing.
No, he said his heart, too. He had stints.
Oh, I didn't know.
That's genetic. Huh? That's genetic. All right. My whole family has heart disease.
That is right. Stint. And when you're gone, I'll explain what a schetel or shtetl is to the group.
Shot a moose.
Okay, see you, pal. Reynolds.
Okay, soon, though. Like, show him how to get out of here. He's going the wrong way. The Chinese guy will help you. You love Chinese people.
Wow.
So a shtetl was the name of, it means a village in Russian or / Yiddish. And the Jews in Eastern Europe in the early 1920s, 30s, and 40s, while they were trying to find a place to settle, would live in these villages, these shtetls. And when the Germans came to call... In places like Warsaw in Poland, they went and they started, you know, killing everyone in their villages in these little Jewish ghettos, and that's where that phrase comes from.
Wow!
So you didn't know any? You didn't know I knew all that Jew stuff.
No, I'm not surprised. You know a lot of
really?
Yeah, I'm serious. Anyway. I'm not surprised.
He's a very smart boy, our Ralph Ben Murgi.
Yeah, he is, eh?
He's really and he's funny. He's funny and he's
oh,
smart.
Oh no, I know. But hey. It's that
a lot of your Jews are, eh?
No.
Hey, Kyle, smart and funny.
Genuinely funny people tend to be intelligent people.
Well, look at yourself with 10 balls and a tenner. I want to talk about this golf game yesterday, and I want to get all of that.
We got to do the squats.
We got to do squatty potty, and we have 40 of them.
Yeah.
We have 40 to give to all our donors that have helped crowdfund the chite.
I know. I gotta get back to the engraver. There's more names on the list.
Yeah, we'll do the best we can for fun.
All we can do is the best we can.
All you can do is the best you can do.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
It's basic human anatomy, and that's where the squatty potty. It's a life changer. Squatty potty opens. Well. It takes the kink out of your colon. It gives you the
It does.
It gives you the proper posture when you're sitting down to do your business. Squatty potty, healthy colon, happy life. It's that simple. Why don't you go to squattypotty.com and you can read all you need to about this marvelous product and how it works. Listen, basically, people, it makes you poop better. Squatty Potty.
I don't think, other than a few times that I've been away or on holidays, I have used the Squatty Potty since you introduced it to me in January of this year.
Yes.
And made my life and a lot of other lives better. This is what you do.
Veterinize.
You're a what?
Veterinize.
Do you use it, Phil?
Yeah, I do. Every morning, in fact. And it comes out quicker no matter what.
Quicker and thicker.
Yeah.
Just the idea of him squatting.
Yeah, two ply.
With his chubby legs up and around his knee ears. Tim Niblett is a portfolio manager, and Raymond James is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Through the auspices of the Humble and Fred Show, a young woman named Tracy Yates. I think I have it here. Oh, come on, Howard. What did I just do with that? Oh, yeah, Tracy. Here it is. Tracy Keats was the winner of our little contest to golf with us. And yesterday, Fred versus the retirement Sherpa in an epic 18-hole battle that came down, if I remember it correctly, to the last couple of holes.
Pretty yes, it did,
goddamned
Howard.
Damned impressive, if I might say.
It was two. At the end, he had won two more than me.
Well, what happens is in golf match play, right. you go hole by hole. It doesn't matter what you score. If you have a five and he has a six, you win the hole.
Yep.
So on the 18th hole, Fred was only down one.
Could have tied her up.
The Sherpa and Fred. And here's the thing, as I wrote this down, to be fair to Tim, Tim's a nice player and plays a lot of golf. Fred's only played, I think yesterday was your 10th or 12th or something like that.
Yeah, about a dozen rounds this year. Mm-hmm.
Based on that, the fact that he plays a lot and you only play occasionally, I only play occasionally as well. I play on occasion. I thought you handled yourself very nicely, and the fact that it came down with still a chance to tie it on the 18th hole was a very, very interesting, and you should be very proud of yourself, because I was. I was proud of you.
No, I was pleased with it, and again, you know, some pointers from you, which are totally invaluable, you know, and as I say this every year, it's like anything else. You have to exercise more to get better, and I should play more golf.
Well, I want to point out
for consistency.
Tracy sent us a note this morning saying, "Hi there, I just want to say thank you again for sharing some of your day with me. I am glad that you tolerated my weak play, gave me some good tips, and answered my annoying nonstop questions. Lots of fun for this forever listener, still princes." She believes we are princes.
Aww.
To me, Tracy. And as I said, I'm not sure if this was on the air or off the air, but definitely it was a new Howard experience yesterday. New Howard was, you know, patient and charming and kind and fun, I think, to play with. I don't know. Did you find me?
I've never had a bad experience with you on the golf course, ever.
Tracy was struggling and I could see she was uncomfortable thinking she was in our way. And I just ended up hanging out with her for the whole day. She stopped playing at one point at my urging. I said to her, maybe it'd just be because it was starting to get some threatening weather the last four or five holes. I said, why don't you and I just ride in the cart and you be my caddy? And she was great. And, you know, I
played. I'm a big fan and.
Fan. Big and fan lots of questions
of
about the show.
For years and very gracious.
And through the auspices of our program, Tim Niblett as a sponsor, she became a client of Tim's, which is how she got to play with us. And the whole thing was a nice day. I will say this, though. It was a tough day at that golf course. The windiest day of golf I've had this year, for sure. Like, it was difficult conditions, but a warm, beautiful day in the fall, and we walked, and it was nice. The last three or four holes, we got a little bit of cloud, but it was fun. And I'm being sincere. I thought that you wouldn't even have a chance against him because he plays a lot more than you, and he plays in tournaments. You know, he plays games where you have to, you know, play by the rules, and it was, you know, early on, it was kind of back and forth. But, you know, you were even with him, I think, with three or four holes to go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is pretty cool, you know, that you're going to have a chance to, you know, at least either win or tie the guy. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. And, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, winning or losing or result was really secondary.
Well,
third and dairy.
So we're on the 10th hole.
Yeah.
And there's a what's called a burn. It's a Scottish term for a small tributary that runs adjacent to the fairway.
Like a little canal.
A little canal or stream or a creek, but it's a burn with rock on either side. And it's only about, I don't know, 6 feet across. And it runs down the left side of the 10th hole at this golf course, Glen Cairn. Amazing, visually beautiful golf course. But it's a Scottish style. So Fred... it's so windy, and we're in the middle of the fairway, but there's lots of humps and bumps, and we're using these push carts that have a brake system on them. And one of the things I showed Freddie at the beginning of the day was, here's how you put the brake on. So I'm over in the right center of the fairway with Tim, and we look over, and it's gusting 60, 70 kilometers an hour. Mm-hmm. And the wind now is blowing Fred's cart toward this tributary of water. But it's happening... almost in slow motion, because I see it. It's too far away for me to do anything. And I'm watching him now run toward his cart and clubs about to dive into the water. Now, I've been at this golf course for 4 years. Guys have told me stories of this happening. But I've never seen it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you didn't tell me that.
Oh, yeah. I'd never seen it until yesterday. And I saw it all unfold, and it was beautiful. You see this?
Yep. Which one is that?
It's the picture of me having fished it out of the tributary.
Right. And I'm walking away.
Well, I want to talk about that picture. It's like I'm literally, I'd gotten down, I went over there to help him out, and I'm pulling the clubs out of the creek. But the picture you'll see in our Facebook page is Tracy and I looking concerned, and I've got the clubs, and Fred's got he's just walking away. And I realize later he's walking away because he doesn't want anyone to think those are his clubs.
No. You know what I was walking, where I was walking to? Fishing my sunscreen out of the
out of
the water.
Okay. We'll do a quick podcast extra and tell you the rest of the golf story. Thanks to Kyle Hirshhorn here producing at SiriusXM. And we're not sure where we're doing the show tomorrow, but there'll be a show. And thanks to Ralph Benjamin Murgi.
Murgi!
This episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by Sleep Country, Pizza Pizza, FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Squatty Potty, Fresh Books, and our newest sponsor, Mitsubishi Motors of Canada. And as always, we broadcast to the world from the center of Canada's universe, Toronto, engulfed in the fine brain fluid of SiriusXM Canada. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfredradio.com.
So, yeah.
Why do we play second fiddle?
So, in the picture, so that's what the deal is. I was horrified by your misfortune. So, I ran over and I fished your clubs out of the creek for you.
Well, I actually did apply the brake, I intended to apply the brake, and Tracy saw it. I actually put my foot down, but it must have snapped back up and I didn't see it. Here's the way I look at it. It's like the classy guy who invites his trashy family to the country club. Because I'm thinking, oh, shit. The thing's going to go in the fucking water. And here's Howard, a member of this golf club. You know what I mean? And you have a way you conduct yourself, a certain behavior at the course. And I don't want to embarrass him. Here he is at his course that he's proud of. And the fucking guy he brings dumps his cart and his clubs into the canal. That's what I was worried about. I thought, oh, fucking somebody will go by.
And I'm Ryan Gosling, you're Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, and it's like somebody will go by and who the fuck did Howard invite here? Look at the fucking clubs. Anyway, I didn't know there was a history of this, so it makes me feel better.
Oh, you're not the first person to do it.
Oh, good. And that wind, any other day.
It was insane,
any
dude.
Other day, that cart doesn't move.
Plus... you know, I use those carts all the time, so I don't always have to put the brake on. I just know a certain way to leave
them. To angle them,
To angle them.
Yeah.
But
same here. It was in the perfect angle to go into the canal.
When it happened, it was just Tim and I, Tim Niblett, who is our also hosting, we were both sort of frozen watching it happen because it was just too far from us to do anything. Yeah. And I was just fucking mesmerized by the gentle imagery of the things going careening into the water and then Fred's running after. And I also thought, oh, this is just shitty because just phone's in there. But the thing is, it's not deep. It's only about 4 or 5 inches of water. Mm. It's not, it would be different if that was full up to the edges of, it's like about a 6-foot drop.
Mm-hmm.
But I had always heard stories of guys doing that, and I was so happy to see it. So, and we'd played golf before. It was funny because I was talking to a friend of mine who's a golf pro, and he said, "You're going to go play today?" He's a big fan of the show, and he, you know, big Humble and Fred fan. And he said, "Oh, I'm playing with Freddie." He goes, "Oh, that's fucking great, you and Freddie.
Get the bastard to dump his cart in the dirt."
No, he said, "That'll be great, and that'll be fucking you and Freddie playing golf. That's cool." Mm-hmm. And then he said, "Dude, you're going to play today? It's a really tough day."
Yeah,
it was.
Special weather statement too. Well, there was 90K like winds, you know, and everything.
Like honestly, the course is a like I say, it's a Scottish links style. So not a lot of trees come into play, and it's very flat. Pot bunkers everywhere. He got into a couple bunkers, and it was like the poor guy. Like all I could see was fucking sand flying up in the air, and I was like, you know,
yeah, but these aren't bunkers. These are holes.
Big bunkers.
They're like fucking craters on the moon.
I may have missed this, but who won?
Well, Tim did, but it wasn't over. And see, the thing is, he was one up on the 18th hole. If Fred ties, it's a tie. If Fred wins the 18th hole, they tie.
We tie. So and it's his course with a lot
Tim
more
But Tim won the second. He won the 18th hole, so he won. We score it 2-0. Mm-hmm. But in actual fact, he was still in play until 18.
And did the golf bag incident happen just before the 18th?
Or was that was on 10.
Okay.
So so Fred recovered. Oh, yeah.
So you kept your cool there, Fred.
Oh, he did keep his cool, Phil, after dumping his fucking clubs.
No, sunscreen.
When it first went in, I ran down to the counter and went, oh, fuck, because, again, I was concerned about you. I was concerned about your reputation.
God, what do you think of those calves, eh? Fucking calves.
I noticed them. They were kind of like that other guy you golfed with a few weeks ago in the summertime with the jacket. Yeah, Ian Service with
the
jacket.
Who was there, by the way?
I know, I saw him. He came in. He came in and said hello.
I told him to go say hi to you.
Right.
That guy's got freaky calves.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, were you okay with how I comported myself during the round?
Did we not discuss this earlier?
No. No, I'm not talking about Mike being nice to her. Do you feel that I have achieved equanimity as a golfer?
You mean not getting upset at the way you play?
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I have no history. I have no reference point. Even back in the old days, whenever I golfed with you, you were fine.
I was holding it in. I was holding it in, Phil.
No, I'm quite serious about that. I can't, you know, I can comment on other aspects and times of your life, but when it comes to, I don't have any, I was golfing with Howard and he was a fucking asshole stories. I don't.
Well, I have to think about me, though. Not very many people do, because I always, I was always, as my friend Sean Casey said, man, you're always great to play with, but I could see you really fucking harden yourself. Mm-hmm. This was a few years ago, and I said, I got to stop doing that. It's, like, ridiculous.
Well, I think any time you and I have played, it was, like, at a just tournament for fun, and just dicking around so you didn't care. So,
But as I told you...
You don't care. But you don't care.
I was hitting it good. I hit it good yesterday a couple times. In fact, in that wind, I had a couple drives that were really cool.
I think maybe I had 5 or 6 bogeys. Did I? Or maybe 5, like, which is good for me.
Yeah.
So I was just saying, on a normal day and another run at that course, I would like to try that one day. You know what I mean?
And you always talk about it being, you know, and my strategy. Grown-up golf course. That was that's as grown up as they get yesterday.
No,
dude.
And I know, and I would play more like Tim does. The thing is, I'd sacrifice some distance for direction. You know what I mean? Place the ball a little better. That's all.
You hit a couple nice shots yesterday.
No, I know. But then a couple of them went in the craters. They were good shots. But if I could,
and then I tried to show you how to get out of the craters,
and you did. And by my last crater shot, how was it?
Amazing.
It was just like, you know, how he showed me.
Fucking, I look over because I'm like, oh, because they're tied. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, he's one down in the last hole, and he. I look over to see where his drive is. I'm like, oh shit, the bugger's in the big hole. And then I was talking to Tracy because, you know, she's asking me a lot of fucking questions, which, you know, is fine because New Howard loves questions.
Love
the question.
Question man. Hey, question man.
Who can take a question and answer it with style? And keep a smile on his face even though there's a lot of fucking questions. The question man can.
The question man can.
Oh, the question man can. The question man can because he turns around. So I'm watching, looking over at Freddie there in the fucking big crater. And next thing I know, the ball comes flying out. I was like, what? And he,
no, he
a
said
nice
open
one.
The face, then do your grip, and then get behind the ball, scoop under the ball.
He did very
everything
nicely.
How he told me to do, and lo and fucking behold, the thing jumps out of that. I'm talking deep crater. Yeah, jumps
big, big, like a giant, you know, they're like a pot bunker, but a fucking big one.
Yeah. And, so went, and not only out, but down the course somewhat.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. So I see him go in, I'm like, well, match is over.
Yeah.
Because he's in the big hole. And then I turn my head and turn back, and all of a sudden the ball comes flying out. I'm like, look at you, Freddie P.
What hole?
So he had a chance at this point.
He did. And I got to tell you, it was, I think, Tim, you know, who was about the nicest person. Eh? He just has this.
Next to you.
Fuck. He's so far down the nice scale from me, but he's so nice, and I think
he's a sweet man.
I think he was getting a little bit like, I don't, because you got nothing to lose if Tim loses.
Do you really think so?
What,
he was getting a bit
I think that
he didn't want to lose.
He didn't want to lose,
really,
because, well, who does?
No, I know, but I thought, okay, that's good, because me, oh man,
I'm trying to
maybe
tell
I should have locked into the match a little more. I was more, to me, the day in the company meant more than the match.
I'm not saying it did to Tim.
Should have directed that ball a little
better. I'm telling you, I'm not saying that it wasn't that way for Tim. I know this as a competitor, though. Mm-hmm. I know when you're, like, we got to 18, and I'm Tim wouldn't have given a much of a shit, but I think it was good for Tim to beat you. And we'll talk to him tomorrow when Friday when he's on, because I don't think Tim wants to walk around going, yeah, I lost to the guy who put his cart in the fucking burn. That's not who I want to be.
That silly bugger.
Yeah, man.
Is Tim American? Is he from Florida? Or
no, he's just...
He's like a big Gators guy. He strikes me as a very competitive, like, American-style sports guy.
By the way, on the hole that Fred dumped his cart in the burn, you didn't even know it. We were playing it from the front tees. I never played the tees, so it was kind of fun for me. It was 320 yards. Downwind, like really downwind. I hit a 3-iron, even with the green. Like, I was literally on a 90-degree angle from the flag. But I said to him, all this chaos was happening. I don't even think he noticed. I literally walked 310 yards from the tee to where my ball was. It's fucking cool.
No, see, you know why? Because I don't have perspective on the course and all that. Like, if I went out one day, like I was going to in Brampton that day, to watch you golf, I would more appreciate that. But I'm trying to, you know, keep my own game together, act properly on your course. So when you did that, you know, I mean, I wish I had appreciated it more. Because I remember, because that's when I said, hey, and there's a hole right there. Right?
Yeah.
I told him where the hole is.
Yeah,
in case he didn't know.
Because I thought that flag was just there for fucking shit. All right. Listen, man, that's the fucking greatest thing ever. We'll see everyone tomorrow somewhere. Yourself up off the side of the road with the elevator poles and you with flash tones, members only.